Ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tuesday, February 14th, 2006 meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen, our second year in a row meeting on Valentine's Day. Because we were retreating last year on a Monday during Valentine's Day. Anyway, we sincerely hope, Mr. Manager, you'll find a way to avoid scheduling meeting next year.
I'm going to make sure Valentine's Day is on a Wednesday next year.
The all-powerful Steve.
Knowing your capacity.
You work it out with the sun.
Let us know if we need to get in touch with Congressman Price about that issue. Meanwhile, this is our regular meeting for Tuesday, February 14th, 2006. Do we have anyone here tonight who is here to address the Board of Aldermen about a matter that is not on our agenda? You can just raise a hand. Okay. In that case, we will proceed to our consent agenda. We'll hear from anybody who's here to speak on a matter that is on our agenda at the time that we get to that item in the agenda. Mr. Manager, if you could review briefly the items on the consent agenda.
Okay. Item one, approval of minutes of previous meetings. Item two is a certification of the fire department roster for 2005. Item three is a resolution supporting two potential routes for the mountains to the Sea Trail in Orange County. Item four, town code amendments involving signs, stop signs, and speed limits.
Okay. Thank you.
Move the item.
Second.
Motion's been properly made and seconded for items C1 through C4. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, we are on item D1, okay. A review of affordable housing for the Carrboro Greens AIS major subdivision.
The Carrboro Greens AIS conditional use permit project doesn't propose to reserve 15% of its units as affordable. Section 15.-541 of the land use ordinance requires that the applicant participate in an affordable housing review meeting with the Board of Aldermen before the project review may continue. At this time, the Board of Aldermen is asked to review the affordable housing component of the Carrboro Greens AIS major subdivision. And Jeff Cleveland is at the podium. And take it away, Jeff.
Very good. Good evening, Aldermen. I'll just give you a brief orientation to this project and where it's located. Jump right in. It's proposed right off of Hillsborough Road. Maybe familiar with that area, right before it intersects with Old Fayetteville. The school is located, McDougall, I believe, is located right in this area here. The numbers, it's in the R20 zoning district. There's 8.65 acres. The base zoning allows 18 units. With a density bonus, you can get up to 26 units. Mr. O'Dwyer from Construction Resource, who's proposing Carrboro Greens, is proposing 18 dwelling units, 10 detached, 8 townhomes. And he is not proposing to build any affordable units as defined by the land use ordinance, although he does include size-limited units on the proposed development. This meeting requires developments under 15% affordable units come before you. And again, at his current density, three of the 18 units would be required for 15%, and this would be with no bonus. And at the bonus density, four of the 26 would be required to achieve 15%. Here's the site plan, and with 40% open space, most of the building envelope is brought to the top of the hill. There's tough drainage issues with this property, and Mr. O'Dwyer will speak more to that. So that's a quick orientation. Is there anything I can, any questions? All right.
Just for folks, that's Horn Hollow Road entrance, right? We were looking at it.
Indeed, that's the Horn Hollow entrance. Which I'm not certain what the future of that holds. Mr. O'Dwyer can answer that question, I'm sure. Anything else?
I guess I'm going to ask the. I noticed in the materials you send us, the path changes from the, that's, I live, just for disclosure purposes, I live on 101 Downing Court, which is in front of the Blackwell Houses, the last unit.
About three or four properties away.
Exactly, well, one property away, across the street.
In this area here?
No, over there. The last house, right there, the Blackwells.
Okay.
I live across the street. That's where the infamous Connector Road out of drive is. And I walk, that's how I walk my kid to school every day. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that there is, what's highlighted in yellow in our materials, the pathway, a different way. And I just want to know what was the rationale for that is. I mean, I know the topography and landscaping is a challenge in that lot, but I would like to know what the rationale is.
Okay, well, Tom could speak to that, but there's going to be a publicly dedicated greenway trail that runs up here, and I think this Horn Hollow entrance is going to have to be condemned. There won't be public standards. Mr. O'Dwyer can speak to that more.
Well, which one do you think needs to be condemned?
I believe that this Horn Hollow access is going to only serve, it's not going to be public any longer. Well, I guess it never was public. It's just been used as if it was public. Mm-hmm. But it will be serving only the local residents down here. It's not going to be considered or dedicated as a public facility, whereas the Greenway Trail is going to drive in a public easement. So your son and you will, if you're a law-abiding citizen, and I'm sure you are, we'll just go right up this Greenway Trail and up to here should this project be approved.
We're not building. Anyway, Carver doesn't allow gated communities. We don't. Yeah. Well, people will be able to walk through it, right?
Yeah, well, certainly.
It looks like the applicant is
ready,
eager to take the podium.
Okay.
This is the sewage line right here. Right.
Hi, good evening. I'm Tom O'Dwyer. Some of you may know me from work I've done in town, Beaver Street Market, Panzanella, Elmo's Diner, Carolina Brewery, Wellspring Grocery. And today I'm before you on an important issue regarding affordable housing on a new project that is my own, and that is our proposed Carborough Greens. If I may discuss with you or describe to you a little more about this property. The area that, this is the McDougall School bus entrance right there. So there's a little greenhouse right here, and this is Horn Hollow that comes all the way down here and used to connect to Amos Horn's property. It no longer does. It's been abandoned. His access has been abandoned, although right now the old road is still there and many people use it to go to Hillsborough Road coming through here, and some people are now coming through here because I did a cut through here to eliminate storm damage from the ice storm. And so along the side of this piece of property is plan to be an Owasa utility that will serve the Barrington Hills lots that do not have Owasa connections. So we've designed with Owasa an Owasa easement that carries all the way down here, and that would also be the connector for these homes for their sewers. the driveway would stay coming through here, and it goes across here to serve these through three houses. It would be a private drive.
Those have the ones that are already built there. Right?
Already built.
Okay.
So the left-hand side of this property, this yellow, is an intermittent stream with buffer. And there are some limitations to this property for development that cause it to not be able to use all of it because of the topography. And so you have unusable areas here that we're going to include in common areas. And then back here is a stream that is not intermittent, that is a tributary to Bowling Creek. And this area right here is kind of an area that's part of a designated greenway that's on the Carrboro designated greenways plat. And we're proposing, or one of our proposals is to dedicate this area to public greenway. And we have neighbors that are interested in dedicating the back half of their property for additionally reconnecting a greenway that was separated previously by this minor subdivision, which did not require that they dedicate that property before. But the property owners have discussed with me the possibility of allowing an easement, should the town want it, to connect to Kate's Farm Road up over here. This is Pathways stub out that would connect to Pathway over here, and then Kate's Farm would come up like this, and there's a potential greenway easement that would continue on through here. There's a bike path back here presently that was co-designed with our engineer and I believe Trish McGuire and myself. The idea is to bike ride through here, through the woods across this constant stream, enjoy this hardwood area, which is really not developable. There's one small knoll right here. The small building could be put on, but in order to reach that with this road, this is a public road, not a private one, I would lose these two lots to extend this road and bend it and come down here just to reach this one lot, and it would take up an area that is filled with hardwoods. So that didn't make any sense to extend this road anywhere beyond this point. So my engineer's report basically says that the building envelope for any lots, and this is a lot development. This is not a turnkey house development. I'm a small business person, and I'm financed just to do this lot. Just like Leighton Wheeler, who is a builder in town, developed Horn Hollow, but he didn't build one of the houses back there. I'll have an $800,000 loan to do the infrastructure here, and when I'm finished with that street, I have to come up with a way to pay the bank back. As a small business person, there's great odds, unless my advertising is successful, that I'll be selling these lots to individuals. But there will be restrictive covenants in the subdivision that are specifically green. I'm hoping that this will be the first in Orange County and maybe in North Carolina, the first completely certified by third-party verification, green subdivision. Healthy Built Homes is the program out of Raleigh. And it'll be Energy Star Homes, and that'll be a requirement of anybody who builds in here. So there'll be restrictive covenants regarding that. And so that's the basic notion. And so we had this building envelope, and we had the limitations of how many lots I could actually get out of this property. And years ago, with Robert Dowling, I was very interested in participating in affordable housing, but we found that we could not. Initially, and first of all, to get a lender to sponsor me and be my partner in a development, they require a 20% return on investment as a minimum. That's not a lot, but it's a safe buffer, and they want to see that I'm making some money. If I lost money, it wouldn't be feasible. So this is a modified, this is a revised chart from the one that you had received the end of last week. I made it tie to Jeff Cleveland's reference of taking four of 26 lots utilizing the bonus. And we did financial calculations based on already what we have verified is the cost of installing the infrastructure, and it would result in a loss of 10% on our investment, of which is $1 million. And it's supported by the backup sheet that you have there, and you can ask me questions about that in a little bit. But basically, as we go through this, the notion here is townhomes are worth $50,000. A townhome pad is worth about $50,000. And analytical consultants did a $2,000 appraisal for me to show me what values are. A single-family home in Calgary is worth approximately $90,000 or $100,000, depending upon the size of the house that you can put on there. These are projected to be worth $90,000. So if I put in 40 lots that are worth $50,000 or 20 lots worth $50,000, that's going to yield me almost half of what 20 single-family home lots would. So the key here is, if I didn't have these streams going through that property, if I could have utilized more of the property to put single-family lots in, what is shown here is that I would have been able to support involving myself in an affordable housing contribution, where I built the houses for as a part of the development. But this is based on the bonus density, where I provide four, and I have a loss here of approximately $100,000 or more. Then we put in the performers for 3 out of 18 units, and the loss would be approximately 1%, none of which the bank will sponsor me for. I have a letter from Mark Royster from SunTrust, who's very interested in helping to support affordable housing, but he has to know that whoever's doing this is going to make a profit. They're not going to support somebody who's making a loss. If I default on my subdivision, there won't be any affordable houses to provide people with. So that's why our proposed subdivision is barely our return rate for 8 townhomes, and the small housing ordinance requires 6. We're providing 8 because I really believe in it. And I just completed another subdivision off of Dairyland Road, where the houses are not very large, and I really believe in that. I'm an advocate of the not-so-big house concept. And these houses, even though they'll be single-family lots, I'll have a restrictive covenant that says that the envelope for the square footage won't be more than 2,600 square feet of any house. So that may be sizable to some of us, but there's plenty of bigger houses in town, as we well know. So the range of housing will be 1,100 to 2,600 square feet. And this would yield me approximately 24% that the bank will finance. If I was able to find, if I was able to not have those constraints of the streams and provide 8 townhomes and 18 single-family lots, which add up to the 26 bonus, the use of the bonus clause, then I would have certainly have made enough money to be able to, this would be a profit inclusive of me contributing. This is after I contribute. So this shows you that if you have single family lots that are worth $100,000 or $90,000, that is where the money is that can support affordable housing. If you do nothing but townhouses and they're only worth $50,000, you're asking for people that are building small houses to support affordable housing, and there isn't an economy of scale here on my property. Additionally, there's some information here where I did a comparison in the property right next door to me that we looked at developing, and the basic same formulas work, and it's on the spreadsheet. You can look at it. There's a return on investment if it was 32 townhomes at $50,000 apiece and 8 single-family lots. Cost of development and the value of the property, if he sold it at its appraised value, would be a return rate of less than 3%. That's not enough for a bank to finance to develop. But if he could find 30 single-family lots and 10 townhomes, then it would very easily support addressing the 15% affordable housing. This is the chart that you're looking at. You can't really read these numbers too well. Pardon me?
Ask if they need a review.
If any of you would like me to review these numbers right now, some of them that are key, I can, but you could direct staff to review it with me afterwards. But this is the data. My bank's financing was based on verification of these estimates with an analytical consultant in order for me to do this and result in a yield of that. And we just took those formulas, and the basic prices are here for the development price of a single-family lot, value of a single home, I mean, of a townhouse pad, and that's, you know, out here extended into potential gross, and then you have the expense of the subdivision, participation of affordable housing, what your yield would be, and what your percentage of return and loss would be. And that is the, these are the, this is the data that is tied to this chart. So, okay. So in summary, on this portion of our presentation, there's basically Steve Addy, our engineer, has in his report, he's explained there's no additional space to add single family lots. You can't go beyond that envelope that I described. If we provided three affordable units at the base density, or three of 18, we would have a projected loss of 1%. And if we provided four affordable units at the bonus density, where I did 26 lots, there's additional costs in providing more pieces, more lots on the same piece of land with utilities and driveway cuts and stuff like that. But our projected loss would be a little over $100,000. And then as we proposed it, I meet my bank's criteria in order to be able to finance this property at 20%. So up front, I'm not able to financially, because I don't have the resources on the land to get single-family homes to sell, to offset, and participate. That's why a number of years ago, I was disappointed with Robert and said, well, I can't get any further than where we are with the property. Are there any questions about my proposal up to this point? Yes.
Yeah. What other restrictive covenants other than the green restrictive covenants would you be looking to place on the property?
Well,
I'm sorry.
The houses themselves are going to be energy efficient. There's some requirements regarding that. The materials that the houses are made of will be healthier materials, identified healthier materials. The property outside, there'll be no pesticides, chemical pesticides allowed outside on the lawns as part of restrictive covenants. And I haven't come up with too many others that I don't want to be too restrictive about what people can do on their property for personal reasons, but it's basically healthy built homes. The idea is that your home is going to be a healing center for you as opposed to a place to get sick. And with chemicals being free on that development, also outdoors, children be able to play there without people concerning themselves with exposure to chemicals.
So most of the restrictive covenants will just be based upon green principles. There are not going to be any other ones.
I have thought about limiting the number of pets. I did that successfully in another subdivision, and I'm glad I did, because another person I know didn't do that. And there was a kennel that was created, and that drove everybody, made everybody very unhappy. So I think that there's a reasonable amount of pets, and I think they should be limited in where your property is small.
I'm not quite finished yet. Is there going to be a homeowners association?
Yes.
That's all the questions I have.
We're not talking about restrictive covenants like you can't hang out laundry or...
Well, it'll be restricted. You can't put a fence in the front of your yard. There are some aesthetic things. If there's any trees, you can't take down trees that are larger than a certain amount without a review of why you're doing it. I'm very...
Minimum, is there a minimum house size or...
1,100 square foot starts at with the townhomes and the maximum of 2,600. If you, I'll have some clauses that will allow, one of the things is stubbing into the attic and or a basement for an efficiency, they call them mother-in-law kind of thing, because that's our future and we need that. So, but the basic first and second floor, maximum of 2,600 square foot. Yes. I'm sorry.
Jackie, we'll come back down this way.
So I'm following what you're saying, and I think you've done a really good job of laying it out in an understandable way, and, right. And thank you for that. What is your alternative proposal?
Coming next.
Okay.
So, two questions. Want to know who the lady next to you is?
Oh, I'm sorry. This lucky guy right here, this is my wife, okay. Mary O'Dwyer, and she's my better half, and she helps me a lot in what I'm doing. She has a planning degree, and she works at UNC at the Leinberger Cancer Center, but she watchdogs me, lucky for me.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Jerry.
It's just such a romantic place to spend it.
Thank you for...
You just gave me an idea when I'm going to put my mother-in-law then.
for the future.
You know, 2 weeks after Christmas, that's enough. You know? Third week.
This is on TV, John.
I like your baseline
John,
idea.
It's on TV. Yeah.
Your wife might be watching. Let's go on.
All right. No, she's sleeping. That's why I'm talking. Two questions. Did you own the property, all that property that was developed before? The Home Hallow, the other houses that have been developed there?
No, that was owned by Leighton Wheeler. And
so you have no ownership on that?
No.
Oh,
no.
Didn't work on that project?
No.
Okay. And did you look, I know some trust is a really good... financial institution, solid. But did you look, I like the project, I like the concept. I mean, we need more of this stuff, this development in Carrboro. And I'm surprised that a large bank like SunTrust will, you know, sometimes they're very, they get scared with alternative building stuff. They like to take very little risk on new things, and I was wondering, but I know they don't take risk without, you know, putting, they don't lose money, put it this way, that's why they're good bankers. Did you look for alternative financing on folks who finance this kind of creative development?
Self-Help Credit Union I spoke with, and I've submitted my data to them. Everybody who lends money wants to see that you're performers are going to have some form of positive to it. And in some circumstances, and I've been investigating this whole situation. I'm enthralled with all the different possibilities of how to approach affordable housing. Because in some circumstances, for instance, if you take a lot and divide it into three in this town, and you build three McMansions, not $1 of that goes towards helping affordable housing. In my opinion, nothing should go through the gates without participating in some way. And I feel that we need to be much more creative. And I just don't think we are here yet. But I know that you're investigating payment in lieus. And payment in lieus are all over the country right now. And they're using it. And you could be resourcing millions of dollars if you included payment in lieus. And you shouldn't have any worry about who holds the money. There are plenty of authorities all over the United States that take in a percentage and then they use that. And you could like be collecting money in this town, and then Robert Dowling could just buy infill lots all over town and simply build them. If you're just trying to use, it's kind of like it's, I just think that it's limited you know, and it has an impact. Big developers, I studied, who you have this 15% affordable housing thing, if they get a big tract of land and they can put, you saw the chart, how it goes up to 56%, that's only with 40 lots. You get somebody with 130, it's nothing for them to give you your 15% minimum. Mm-hmm. And they're making 100 and 150%. You need to have a real clear understanding. Somebody needs to be really, and I would love to participate in this because of all the stuff I've discovered. But a large developer can easily afford, especially when they build these big homes, to help with the affordable housing needs. Townhouses, where you got somebody who wants to build small houses for people, shouldn't be where the tax is, disproportionately levied. I don't know if this is answering some of your question. But
well, you started answering the question about the alternative financing. Did
financing, they
did self-help
have the same
or
requirements.
Financial institutions put you the same?
Same requirements, same basic requirements. It's about a 20% return on investment. They want to see that I'm going to be profitable. And you
told them that these houses are going to be just built across the street from one of the best schools in the district.
Well, they're all enthusiastic, but what they say is, show me some performers that show me that you can, build a house for $160,000 and sell it for $95,000, include that loss into your performers, and if you can make a profit, we'll sponsor you. And I haven't been able to show them that. Because of the constraints on my specific property.
Topography constraints.
Yeah.
Dan.
Tom,
sure.
I'm curious. Apparently you based your affordable housing contribution on three single-family lots rather than three townhouse units.
No, not just the lots. It includes the units as well. The ordinance says I'm to provide the unit.
So you're assuming that you would
build nobody else's house, according to the ordinance. Uh-huh. I would build nobody else's house on this whole subdivision, but I would be required, or I would be building the affordable.
Okay, so that's your estimate of the cost of the
right. There's another support sheet that you were given last Friday that shows you the breakdown of the cost of construction for an affordable house. You multiply that times three, and that's what those numbers are, three or four. And there's a loss to that extent. Yes, I'm sorry.
I'm really glad we're having this conversation, and that I'm sorry you're in the uncomfortable position of being where it comes up. But
this is exciting.
I think we have a lot of good stuff in place to encourage affordable housing, and I think the 15% and the density bonus and all that stuff is good stuff. My worry all along has been that it'll put us in a position where only the big national building companies can come in and afford to meet our standards.
And they won't be building green.
Exactly. And the little kind of homegrown businesses, and you're not little, like mid-sized homegrown businesses, can't hold their own. And so what we're going to... So we encourage the kind of mega developments that throw in what they need to. This is going to give us an opportunity to fine-tune things so that we can get our needs met from, if the mega developers come in, then we can get them, but also to fine-tune things so that we can work with our mid-size local building companies. And 18 houses is actually it's small for what's going up now. I think we're going to go through a little bit of a bumpy conversation here, but I think it's a good conversation for us to be having.
So,
Tom, you want to explain about what your proposal is?
Yeah. I did a lot of investigation about, other communities and how they address affordable housing. The thing just kept coming up. All these creative ways of doing payments in lieus based on multiple different factors, topographical constraints, financial, size of, you name it. And they're in cities.
Boston, Boulder, Davis, California, Irvine, California, Longmont, Colorado, Montgomery County, Maryland, So a lot of places around the country.
Del Mar. I mean, there's just, if you Google up affordable housing in lieu, you won't believe all the stuff that's there. It's wonderful. There's a lot of stuff, and you can learn from it. So in the process of doing that, I know that you don't have a payment in lieu, but I always wanted to participate somehow. And then I started reading about payments in lieu, and I came back, and my tail wagging, and I said, what about a payment in lieu? And they said, we can't do that here yet. Yeah. And I was like, well, okay. How about a contribution? And that's basically what I'm conceptualized, is I'm going to be proposing that, you know, if I'm not the builder of these houses, I'm only financed to be the land developer, and I can't provide out of this land development affordable housing. But, and this is, it's interestingly enough, this situation may happen with other places. You're not always guaranteed that a person who develops land is the guy who builds the houses. And that's what there's an assumption, I think, in this formula that the land and the guy who builds the house is where they're going to get enough money to help this whole thing happen. But Leighton Wheeler had 9 lots. He didn't build one. I had a subdivision out off of Deary Land Road, 12 lots, took 15 years to finally sell them all. I didn't have a carrying cost on them, fortunately. But in this project, I'll have $800,000 for infrastructure costs alone for that amount. So my concept and proposal here is that there's like a restrictive covenant that simply gives 2.5% of the sale price or appraised value of the property before occupancy gets issued to either the town of Carrboro or a designated appropriate entity like Orange Affordable Housing or whatever the town says. This would result, for instance, in my subdivision, in producing what is projected in sales at up to $162,000 in revenue. And this is just one little, and this is without me doing bonus lots or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's just the most creative I thought I could be. You may not get it right up front, but it's there. And I think that it's a model to look at, to consider as a possibility for more creative ways to create a revenue stream. Because then Robert Dowling can go out, like I say, and he can collect millions over time and then buy infill lots all over town and just hire builders or build them himself. And instead of just requiring, now he's requiring builders to provide the homes as a part of their package, and then he pays you $95,000. Myself, as a quality builder, I'm very concerned about the quality that these developers are going to get, what they're going to give you for an affordable house. There's no real specs. It's like, here you go. And so I think quality is going to be an issue.
Well, I actually have a couple of questions. On those places where you indicated that they have payment in lieu, how many of those jurisdictions have inclusionary zoning?
By inclusionary zoning.
Inclusionary zoning means that you have to have a certain amount of diversity in the housing. That is, if you have a 500 square foot house, you also have to have a 2,200 square foot. So it requires inclusion.
There were some when I was reading it. So, like I say, it varies. And it's creative. I mean, you know, you could probably read for 6 months on all the different uses, but a lot of them are wanting to address mixed use for sure.
Some of them are allowing it in exchange for, you know, different size retail space than there would have been in a mixed use community.
No, I'm not talking about mixed use community. I'm talking about mixed size, not mixed use as retail business, but mixed use as in terms of size.
Mm-hmm. Small housing,
yeah. Larger housing, medium size housing.
I read one out of all that I was reading about, but I know that the town has an ordinance for small housing, and I think that's a much needed thing.
Alex has been waiting.
Thanks, Tom. You're bumping up against a question that, that obviously we bumped up against in the last time we had a conversation about this sort of miasma of mechanisms that are designed to make this work. And you're obviously struggling with one of the dilemmas that, that we had to face, which was at what point does, you know, payment in lieu as part of the scheme become functional? At what point do, and I'm just relating some of the conversation that went on in the hopes it would be helpful in your thinking, but that as a general rule, if a payment in lieu scheme were just applied across the board, I think the concerns that others have raised would be that the larger developers would simply be able to buy out, right? And one of the problems that we discussed as well is that is that securing property is not just in terms of the financing, but physically finding and securing property is as big a challenge for Orange Community Housing and the other entities that, that do this business as all of the other aspects of it. And that's why the system is designed to encourage to try to get developers to piggyback and partner with them so that they take advantage of those opportunities as they arise, in that if Robert were sitting on however many millions of bucks available to purchase property, then comes the great difficulty of finding developers who are able and willing, or landowners, to part with it in the process of putting together a permit, which is the process that you're going through right now for a variety of reasons. Anyway, that's just to kind of illustrate the struggle that's going on, and that the notion of a payment in lieu mechanism has been discussed. It's just a question of what the downsides are and whether it gets us where we need to go. I mean, I'm not deaf to your proposal. I think in your situation, it's an interesting idea. When is the last time? I'm jumping around a little bit. I'm addressing your concern about potential quality. What's the last time that you had conversations with Robert over at the Land Trust about this?
3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago? Okay. Because I found the concern about quality to be curious, in that part of what the Land Trust's appeal, if you will, to buyers is that Robert and the people in the production management team are very careful to ensure that the specs, designs, and materials are market rate, and that the Land Trust units reflect market rate quality and they stand behind the product. So
previously he was the builder. He did a lot of his own building. Now he found that he lost money on that. So then he decided to have developers do it for him.
It's not an all or nothing game either. Yeah. I mean, the Land Trust, I sit on the board of directors, is right. Still in the development business, although
right.
We're trying to function more as a facilitator. It's yeah. for most people, it's easier to do it that way.
Right.
But he's pretty careful. He and Christine and the other staff members are very careful to ensure that even under this under this scheme, that quality control is an important part of what's done.
In Carborough Greens, the houses are not going to be built to market specifications.
Right.
They're going to be at a higher standard. And so if we were to build the houses there, would we build them to the green standard that we're requiring for the rest of the subdivision and then have a greater loss because Robert would only pay us $95,000? Or would we make them, to be equitable, would we make them the same as all the rest? I mean, it just opens this whole...
Money is a pressure at
sure.
all the time,
right.
You know, to most business people.
Jackie?
I think we're in a... Because of the size of Carborough Greens, and I think a lot of us are excited about the environmental and health aspects of it. It's the kind of building that certainly many of us are working towards having in Carborough. I think because the size issue creates problems, that this is different than a large development. And I'm inclined in this particular case to say, yes, let's ask Tom to make a donation to the the land trust in this one particular case. And then let's get to work, and including Tom and some other folks in similar situations, in coming up with ways of fine-tuning our mechanisms so that we're still providing affordable housing, and maybe there are some scales that we're working on instead of just a blanket policy.
Well, that finally got people excited. All right.
I would lean to that, but for the fact that if I were a large developer, and you may want to have a seat because I'm not, are we in the discussion phase?
I have another question.
Of course. Why don't you ask him another question, then I'll get into the discussion phase.
Okay. Tom, noting that your estimated payment in lieu is more than the sale price of three of your townhouse lots, mm-hmm. is the reason you can't dedicate three lots, say, for Habitat to build on or something like that, because you need to keep that cost below the bottom line for the bank? Is that what you're
doing? Yeah, I mean, if I eliminate three townhouse lots, that's $150,000
off the top,
and then that makes me lose money. Mm-hmm. And I have to, they won't lend me the money if I'm going to just give it away. So there is a, you know, a bell curve mm-hmm. about minimums that I just am limited because I can't get a lender to allow me to just be philanthropic.
And if I can stay on asking Tom for a question or two for just a second, mm-hmm. when you worked out this rather elaborate spreadsheet, can you tell us? Factored into this is your estimate of what it would cost to build one of the unaffordable dwelling units,
yes.
or three or four, depending on which column you're looking at.
Yes, there's support sheets to that was given in the original ones that have the estimates of those affordable houses.
Just remind me, what was your assumption about the size of the units that you would build for the affordable housing?
1,100 square foot.
1,100
square foot, two-bedroom, two-bath, townhomes, mm-hmm. High energy efficiency.
Right. Okay. That's helpful. Thanks. Are there more questions for Tom? We can always call him back up if we really need to. But
I want to get a clarification. So the townhomes you would build, is that correct, or is that
if I was to do the affordable housing component,
right?
I would need to be providing the
right.
townhomes built. None of the other houses would be built, but I'd
would
be obligated.
I got it.
We would be making him do it.
I wanted to be very certain. Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Right.
If
okay.
we, depending
that's
on
not
what
your
we
plan.
Decide. Other questions for Tom?
that's how I walk my kids every day to school. You know,
it's wonderful.
And I just
want
to make sure that public access will continue to.
That's the whole idea. It's a publicly dedicated. It's a publicly dedicated bike path, and that greenway would be that orange area would be for public.
It connects this neighborhood to Wexford, Arcadia, Barrington Hills. So you and your other neighbors can continue, you know, to just come down the road and walk your kid to school.
Like a backyard park.
Yeah.
Okay. And, I'm going to leave it for the discussion. Thank you.
And may I have 15 seconds in closing based on what I've heard you say something? And then
go right ahead.
So I am, aside from what I'm doing here, I am very interested. I was involved, I think James Harris, a few years back, he came to me, and there was limitations on the ability to build the Carrboro Farmers Market. And I worked for about 9 months on trying to meet that challenge because it was way over budget, and I came up with a program that was successful that allowed that to manifest, and I did that on a volunteer basis. And, you know, I'm an enthusiastic person, and I really think that something can happen here. And I would like to offer the spreadsheets is the beginning of telling a story. It tells you a story. Well, you take this spreadsheet and start applying it to any piece of property that comes through zoning, and you can start to see what is possible and what is not. And then you know how to negotiate or what to expect, how to weed out the greedy, and how to identify the hardships. And you have them come in with their appraisals, their development estimates, and you plug it in. And then you can actually see, instead of just kind of wondering who's pulling your leg and who's not, what the possibilities are. And if you see that it's not financially possible, I say, for heaven's sakes, don't let one house get built that's a nice home unless a percentage of that is helping affordable housing in some way, shape, or form. So I would love to volunteer, or if you want to direct staff to have, you know, contact me, or I don't know how I would do this, but...
You're going to email us the spreadsheet, right?
Okay.
I would ask Tom one other question. In terms of your discussions with the bank, would it be possible to have a scenario where... And basically, they're concerned at the end of the process that you make the profit, and you know they're going to get their money back,
right,
and their return.
It's really only that last part that they're concerned about.
Right.
But
yeah.
yeah. Exactly. Thank you for clarifying that.
But in order to get to that last part, they want to see some evidence.
I don't know if
but
you
my,
know
my
Mark
point is,
but he's a wonderful man.
If
I'm just teasing, I'm sorry.
You know, if there was, you know, staying with this idea of dedicating some of the townhouse lots potentially for affordable housing. Mm-hmm. If that was left for the last part, in other words, so that you would have your other, say, 15 units sold, mm-hmm, and prove to the bank either you met your targets or did not. And if not, in other words, what I'm looking at is an option where perhaps we could get some lots in that community for affordable housing into the land trust, but that, you know, if the problem with the bank is there, you know, then we would go back to the payment in lieu as, you know, in other words, if you needed to sell those at market,
right,
value. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Try, yeah, and come up with a last ditch kind of scenario where something's,
yeah,
where
those
held
are held in reserve.
In reserve, and if it meets a performance guideline where the bank is okay and there's enough profit coming out of it, you know, potentially those lots and the revenue that's coming from the contribution combined could make that difference.
Right. So then rather than you contributing 162 after the fact would be the equivalent of 150 before, but contingent on, you know, your meeting, you know, you're satisfying the bank. So I guess what I'm asking is that
if somebody would
that
like
you
to, if I can get a staff member or somebody to further discuss how far there are some coefficients that happen, like when I get rid of three of those lots, then that's three times 200,000 in sales that I don't get 2.5% on, and then that reduces the 162, and so I have to create a performer that shows me what effect that would have, and I'd be happy to work on that.
Okay.
Last question. What's the timeline you have for this? If it works out.
Well, we've done one application, and it's the first comments were reviewed, and it's been in a little bit of a stall for legal reasons. I had a partnership, but I had to resolve the issue of the investment, so we kind of waited for that to happen, and also there are some issues that have to do with stormwater management. It's very difficult. The plan that you've got there has got a whole bunch of bioretention gardens that we're having to install because it slopes and it goes down to that stream, and the town's engineers are saying that the impervious surfaces, that's another reason why we can't increase too much, we can't create too much impervious surface on this property because it slopes and it goes races right down into that creek, and the new rules say no silt. So our engineers had some challenge in dealing with that and re-engineering it, and I think our next submittal might be a couple months from the initial review. So potentially, if our next review was successful, I suppose we would, you know, I don't know, I'm told the process might take 6 months. If it takes him two, it might take six, unless it gets kicked back out again for comment. Something like that, Jeff?
Yeah, probably after the summer break.
Yeah.
Okay. Alderman Zaffron.
This is just a question for the attorney. Mike, since we haven't developed a mechanism as a matter of policy to participate in any kind of payment in lieu scheme, what position would it put us in if we were again on an ad hoc basis to try to arrive at some sort of, I think hybrid is a reasonable word to use in entertaining the mechanism that Dan's been kicking out. I find that to be a very interesting proposal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been pointed out several times. I think it's really not a payment in lieu is kind of to make the analogy to the the recreation requirements. For example, we have recreation requirements. You have to do something, and then there's a formula that establishes if the town wants to accept and the developer wants to do it that way. There's a formula that establishes a payment in lieu of those requirements. Since we don't really have an affordable housing requirement per se, we don't have a payment in lieu arrangement. So it occurs to me that this is simply a proposal, a voluntary proposal which he's putting forward, and I suppose the only precedential value that it would have is if there was another developer that said, well, I don't want to or can't do the affordable housing, I can't provide the affordable housing for whatever reason. One could at least look at this and say, well, would you consider that? What one would presumably know is that this proposal works. I mean, the percentage, I presume, was not entirely picked out of a hat. I presume that the percentage was based upon something that Mr. Dwyer feels is reasonable. So it sort of gives you another option by way of suggesting to someone, well, if you can't do that in one of these contexts, maybe you'd consider what Tom O'Dwyer did. Has that, that would be the value of it seems to me. But it's not binding on any successor, but it would have some sort of, you'd give another alternative to, up to this point, we haven't had a way of saying, well, if you wouldn't do that, would you do this? This is a this, an alternative this.
Are we at the discussion point?
I think so.
Unless
if y'all want to have a seat for the toll. Can
house?
We call you back?
it's a greenhouse that I recently built.
Looks great.
Wow.
All right. That's
looks great. Can you
take that thing down? Joel.
I guess these are the factors that I think we need to look at when we're thinking about payment in lieu. What really is the available land, and what is it zoned? Because this is R20, and if we remove ourselves from his particular situation, although it's raised some issues, what will we do for other similar situated individuals that don't maybe have the topographical issues? That's one question. The other thing is, what is the total amount of available land and what is the zoning on that land? Because that has a factor in what can be placed on that land and the amount of density, and it would change the numbers if we use that as a formula. And that's got to be acknowledged, the density issue. The other issue is, to me, which we never discuss, and I think this has an effect on sort of the maintaining the affordability of all those non-neighborhoods who are not developed in the homeowner model. Because there are certain things in the homeowner association neighborhoods that preserve them, and also, while preserving them, expose the other non-developed homeowner association neighborhoods to attack for rental and what have you, and then increasing the value of those houses and keeping people from buying them as single-family homes. And I think we have to think about that, because we're either going to expand the mix, and this has nothing to do with his proposal, because it's a sort of a complex issue. It's just not about, are we going to accept money for $162,000 or $150,000? Because, you know, I'm still thinking if we have the money, but Robert or any other institution that's going to be competing with the available land, with the available zoning that's on the land, we're still in the same position that we're in before. And I'm not saying that this development shouldn't be approved. I'm just saying that it is a more complex thing than fitting this development in the box. Mm-hmm. And I guess my only other comment would be that if we're going to do payment in lieu, then it's got to be a very refined and detailed decision with knowing about all those factors. Because the trigger point for some who could provide affordable development is different than the trigger point for some other. And I think it's very complex. It's not just saying, you know, I like this and it's green development and what have you, and I don't want to penalize the mid-size developer. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, then maybe we should provide some other mechanism that if you do certain things, it's not going to take you 6 months to get your project through the pipeline. It may take you four or three. And the clock's always ticking on paying interest and on that bottom line. So when we talk about these things, I think we should think about all of them, not just this proposal, because it has an effect on future proposals, be they large or small.
Dan.
Okay. A few points. One is, I think Tom made a pretty good case. It's pretty clear that there are economies of scale, that when you get a Centex-style development coming in, it's easier for them to meet this requirement. But I think in this particular instance, when you get to the smaller development, it's really not the size that's the sticking point. Because really what we have here is a $6.5 million project, and we're trying to get our affordable housing out of the first $1 million, which is what Tom's piece of it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it was out of the whole $6.5 million, we might have a better shot out of it. So I just thought that's an important point to make and something we don't need to solve tonight. But, you know, there's a question. So when the lots are developed and then the houses are built separately, you know, is there a way we can cross that transaction to get affordable housing on site? And then the other thing in terms of the payment in lieu, if we were to set up our own housing fund, which I think we should at least look at what that would be and take some time to hash out how that might work and how we might structure a payment in lieu program more formally, I think given the time frame that Tom is looking at here, and even, you know, the till the end of the summer, till this comes back, I think we have plenty of time to solve those questions before any money from this project would come into the town. So I don't think I'm kind of responding to Jackie's point that in this case we might have to send the money to an agency, and I don't think we necessarily would need to do that.
If I can jump in for just a second and address that particular point, I had an interesting conversation with Robert Dowling from Orange Community Housing and Land Trust, and he expressed support for the idea. I don't want to put words in his mouth about what he thought. He didn't really express that much of an opinion about exactly how we should resolve this issue with the Carborough Greens development. But he did clearly make the point that if we should decide that we're going to accept a payment in lieu, that he thought it would be appropriate for that payment in lieu to come to the town as a way of seeding some type of affordable housing trust fund so that the funds would be dedicated toward affordable housing rather than the funds going simply directly to the land trust.
Is there a way, payment in lieu, I know with the recreation bonuses, I know that payment in lieu was what happened with the larger tracts of land was exactly the precedent that we really want to avoid here. But I think there's something in the creativity of the dedication that we might look at differently. Rather than looking at it in terms of just a straight payment. And I'm not quite sure, maybe it's just a semantic thing, but the sense of having, if it's payment in lieu, it can be looked at as just straight dollars that come out and cover the cost of the affordable housing. But if we look at the possibility of dedication and how that can be expressed in terms of affordable housing, especially because a proposal like this also values the green housing that we're looking for. And so that's another value that we might want to look at. But just a straight payment in lieu, I know with the recreational bonuses that became, you know, to the, you know, the biggest builders could easily circumvent what we were looking for, and I wouldn't want to create a precedent. So maybe we need to create another category on this cafeteria of affordable housing options.
Jackie,
I think Alex is.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alex.
It's okay. I was just trying to pull this back to the proposal that Dan was formulating, which I think in some respects articulates what I hear you looking for,
right,
which is that essentially the first position, if you will, would be to seek a dedication, and that Tom would agree to try to do that as the first position. Mm-hmm. If, however, in the process of doing so, after, again, having gone through the process of selling his market rate lots, correct me if I'm misinterpreting what your suggestion was, that proves to be infeasible, then there's the backup position of a cash contribution. I think as the attorney pointed mm-hmm. out, payment in lieu is perhaps the wrong term to use, right, because we're working in the sort of netherworld of what I would call a pseudo-voluntary participation. am I accurately characterizing what? And so I think that gets exactly, mm-hmm. Randy, to what you were looking for, mm-hmm. but that we have a backup mechanism so that there, if that proves by some standard that we set or agree to with Tom to be infeasible, then there's a plan B available.
You're not as much of a poker face as you think you are, Mr. Bro. What's your response to that? That's
I don't play poker, at least
good.
Well. well, I guess if I understand the proposal from Mr. O'Dwyer is that there would be restrictive covenants associated with his sale of the lots, and that the party that buys the lot, and correct me if I'm wrong, the party that buys the lot would be the party that when they resell it, whether they're building a custom home for someone or they're building a spec home for someone and then selling it, but at some point they're selling the lot with a house on it, that the 2.5% would come from the value of that, and the transaction, the funds would take place at the time that took place. Where are you, Tom? Is that shaking his head? Yes, that's correct.
Yes, or if somebody wanted it as a rental house, it would have to be appraised.
Right.
And then that appraised,
but it's
value,
but the, so that the funds aren't coming. The funds are coming at the time that the house is completed.
Changes the time.
Right. And the reason that raises complications for the way that you were just that Dan and Alex were discussing it is that you can't wait to the end and find out what's happened. That the first house that has to be sold would have to be sold with that covenant already in place, And I'm sort of imagining that if those covenants were there, that let's say somebody bought that lot and then put a house on it, a spec house to sell, that sales price would be adjusted in such a way that it reflects the fact that they've got to give 2.5% to the town. But that those covenants would have to be in place at the time that the first one is sold. You can't really wait till the end, if I understand the way the process would work.
So what you're saying, and it's Tom agreeing, that the 2.5% is something that Tom would pass on to the builder, and then the builder would pay the town?
Unless, of course, he did the houses himself. I mean, that's it's not
guaranteed. Okay, I misunderstood that. I thought Tom was paying us, but just that it was delayed.
No, it's the 2.5% is coming from the value, either sale or appraisal of the completed house lot package,
which is essentially the reason that it's not the same thing as him just giving us three townhouse lots or something like
that's
that.
Right.
Which has a similar market value. It's because the payments being, and I'm not trying to be negative, I'm just trying to be clear about it, but it's being sort of pushed off to the next generation of transaction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
So what do we do?
I need to give some thought.
I think we have two issues here right now. And the first issue is, how do we deal with this specific project?
Go ahead.
How do we deal with Carborough Greens and the situation that's arisen? And then what do we do in the long term? And I really don't want to put these folks in the position of having to wait 6 months to a year to figure out what we're going to do in their situation. So maybe we could think about this and ask staff for a recommendation for Carborough Greens and kind of make a decision within the next several weeks for this particular case, and then also think some about how we're going to deal with this as a long-term issue and kind of scaling things so that they're fair to the mid-sized builder as well as fair to the mega folks.
Let me just, if Ms. Mayor, if I could just add, this is a little unusual in the sense that this process does not normally require you to make a decision.
Right.
I'm going to be real clear about that. It's not we're going to vote in favor of the project or we're not going to vote in favor of the project, as you know. The only thing that's really kind of different about this project is the proposal would require some sort of acceptance. In other words, if you were to say we don't want the money, for example,
we don't
like the proposal, and therefore we don't want you to do that proposal. We're not interested in accepting the money. It's nice, but we just don't want to do that. That would require a decision, but it's not a decision on the project, and it's a little bit unusual in that respect. But it's not, you're not called upon to make a decision as to whether or not the project goes forward or doesn't go forward or waits or doesn't wait. The project can go through the process, and it's going to get to you after this process. I mean, this is a step in the process. This step occurs this evening, and then the project goes forward. So there's really not a decision for you to make, except in this case, there's a decision ultimately that will have to be made as to whether or not, if he continues to offer this as a proposal, you want to accept it.
So we're not holding him up?
No. No.
We got to work on.
We might at some point. But.
back to, you know, this idea of getting the lots at the end, I'm trying to deal with the attorney's point. And it seems to me that we could still be in the situation where everyone who builds, you know, Tom's contract with the builders is that each one of them contributes 2.5% to an affordable housing fund that Construction Resources holds. And so then after 15 houses are built, then he's got $150,000 and he's got three townhouse lots left. And so, you know, if it works out that way, that he can give us the lots, he can, And if he can't, then he's holding on to the money. And if he does give us the lots, then he's got the equivalent cash in hand that compensates him for not having sold those to builders. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I think so.
That, in other words, those two it can be folded together.
It may be. There may be, like I think Mr. Dwyer suggested, that there may be ways of dealing with that in some creative fashion that it could work. I'm not sure.
We don't have to.
And you don't have to decide.
We don't have to work out every detail of a proposal here. I mean, I think the goal is to give some feedback to both the staff and the applicant about what this board might find acceptable, if anything.
Just as a process suggestion, I mean, it sounds like we've got an idea on the table that Tom looks like he's interested in pursuing, and maybe if Dan and Tom and staff would be willing to sit down and see if they could hammer out some kind of mechanism or agreement that would make everybody happy. Tom, does that sound interesting to you?
Can I just...
Why don't we do that?
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
For this proposal, Alex, not that I'm opposed to it or anything, but I'm just, you know, exceedingly cautioned about the precedential value. No matter, you know, I understand that we would not be bound in the future, but I'm willing to put 100 down that somebody else would come up with larger and more resources and try to use the same mechanism. But in that, while you're doing that, exploring what really would be the trigger points in terms of size, absent topography issues. Because that's sort of an important thought for future people that come down the line.
Jackie.
Maybe we need to talk about usable land, like buildable land.
Right.
You know?
Well, I think it would be reasonable for us to strike a compromise here and to at some time shortly later to decide on what our policy to actually have an adopted sort of policy statement that, you know, may be entirely consistent with whatever compromise we work out on this particular project, or it may not be. But the point being to say, you know, there's the board seems disposed to understand that there's a situation that you're up against here, and I think we should work out something. I have some reservations about what's been laid out there right now, but I think the whole point was we don't have to have every question about it answered at this point. But I think it would be good for us in the aftermath of whatever we decide to do with Carborough Greens here, I think it would be good for us to have a well-considered policy about payments in lieu after this time. And it doesn't have to be exactly the lack of policy that we're going to apply in this situation. Randy.
I just wanted to add that I think that the it's important to explore the potential option of having a dedication if it would support affordable housing. But I also think that we have to be very careful about how we craft the language because of the precedential issue.
Absolutely.
And I think that would naturally follow. So I just wanted to add that.
And I want to suggest, and I would like to actually say about this development too, that my gut reaction to all of this is I think that for any development that comes through, for a developer to ask to do a payment in lieu for something like one of the affordable units that would otherwise be required is very reasonable.
but that we need to set some strict limits on the number of units that one could do a payment in lieu for. And I would suggest that limit would be one. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be doing a very small development that would only call for one unit, you would be allowed to do a payment in lieu for that one unit. If you're doing a very large development that would otherwise normally require 15 units, well, you would have to do 14 units, and you would be allowed to do one payment in lieu.
So you'd have to do 14 units, and you could just pay for one.
And you would be able to pay for one, so that for the most part, what we would be getting is the housing. Right. But we would be providing some flexibility to allow payments in lieu. And we would have a trust fund with the town of Carrboro so that the funds that came in on those payments in lieu would go toward helping meet some of the affordable housing needs that we are not otherwise able to meet. We don't have any local tax dollars to spare for anything, frankly, but available to put into affordable housing right now. We don't get entitlement community development block grant money like our neighboring town does because we're too small. We do get a certain portion of the home program allocation, but home money comes with a lot of strings attached. Believe me, it comes with a lot of strings attached, and it's complex to use. But when, you know, somebody in Carr Court who's living on Social Security and has a leaky roof and no money to pay for repairing that roof needs help, we don't really have any resources available to help a person like that. And I think if we had some type of trust fund, and we would need to have a set of rules for sure. But if we had an affordable housing trust fund, we would have a fund that we could look to and say, is this particular situation one that would be well addressed by money in this fund? We would have money that would be available to us on a time frame that where we don't have to. HUD's not very fast at writing checks, let me just put it that way, when money is needed, even when the activity qualifies for HUD money. So I think we need to take advantage of the possibility of payments in lieu, but we also need to draw some kind of firm line somewhere and say, but as a policy matter, what we mostly primarily want is the housing in the developments. And again, I'm not necessarily proposing that we, firmly lay that rule down with respect to Carrboro Greens, but I am saying let's develop a policy and let's put a policy in place. Now, with respect to Carrboro Greens, my reaction to looking at – and let me back up and just say one thing to the developer here, which is I really appreciate that you have laid your cards on the table. And it's very clear to me looking at the materials you submitted that you're being very honest with us about what the issues are. And we often see developers who are extraordinarily cagey about some of these questions. And I want to thank you for being honest about what the situation is and why it's hard. And backing that up with some numbers. But I want to suggest that what I would really, really like to see is for y'all to explore a way that Carrboro Greens can reconfigure some of its lots in such a way as to provide two affordable housing units within this development and maybe one payment in lieu. And when I say I could be really flexible on the question of whether we would ask you for anything more than the dedication of the lots for that purpose. In other words, not even to necessarily ask you to undertake the risk of actually building the units on those lots. But I calculate that you've got a pretty good amount of street frontage here. Some of these lots look to me to be 70 to 85 feet wide. I would like to explore whether there could be some 50-foot wide lots or something along those lines, whether by being a little bit more creative about some of that aspect of the development, you could find two more lots in here that could be dedicated to the land trust and let the land trust work out with Habitat for Humanity or through the home program or whatever how to get those lots developed and developed consistent with your architectural standards. But that's what I'd really like to see is for us to work out a way to have two lots in here, and then some kind of reasonable payment in lieu for in lieu of a third dwelling. But all that said, I'm just from what the attorney said, all we're here to do is to share with you some perspective from the board. That's just me talking. So.
Can I just ask you a question? Yeah. As just part of the discussion, clarification. If these units are identified affordable in the first sale, do they continue affordability in each?
Yes, our affordability criteria.
Because they're part of the landscape.
I just wanted to clarify that.
The 99-year restriction is inviolable in meeting our criteria.
I just wanted to get that
because,
out there.
Because they would be a part of the land
right.
trust.
Otherwise, yeah. they could fall.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. And hope I don't mean for what I'm suggesting to be entirely at odds necessarily from the scenario that y'all were talking about. I just wanted to throw that out there as another.
I take it as totally compatible.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's another useful iteration that could
right.
work.
Well, unless anybody else from the board has any comments on this issue at this time, we'll probably leave it there. Tom looks like he wants to say one more thing, but.
I just look forward to, if somebody wants to make it time to study this more, I look forward to doing that to see if there are other okay. ways for me to accomplish this. I've racked it for 2 years now, and I can comment about all the different possibilities that you mentioned and how that works and the board doesn't work. And but I look forward to the possibility of coming up with something creative that will contribute to this project.
Mr. Dwyer said basically, for those of you listening elsewhere, that he looks forward to working with members of the Board of Aldermen who might be interested in trying to help out, figure out some of these scenarios in a workable fashion.
So just to wrap this up in a little
sure.
package, are people still interested in the idea of essentially assigning Dan, staff, and Tom to sit down and knock these ideas that we've discussed around and see if they can put together a proposal to bring back to us that we can give our blessing to, because we want Tom to participate. Tom wants to participate. We're reaching a logjam in terms of the mechanism to allow him to do so.
Okay.
And
yeah.
get
yeah.
these three folks together and see if they can work something out.
Okay.
That work
for you, Mark? That's good. I think that's where we are. I don't think we even need a motion. I think that's just what we're doing. Okay.
Are we going to try and set up some kind of process tonight for further refining the idea of an actual payment in lieu and also setting up our own fund?
You know, I think what I would suggest is that following on to the kind of conversations that Alex was just talking about, I would really appreciate if you and or the staff would come back to us with some thoughts about how to approach that.
Okay.
I would go even so far as to say, if you want to throw a kind of straw man version of that out there, that would be helpful for us to be able to give some reaction to you.
Yeah, I'm sure that me or the staff could do that.
Yeah, there you go. You'll have a great time with it, I'm sure. All right, Alderman Herrera.
I just want to. I'm totally in support of the idea, but also I just want to caution the board that that we're not setting a precedent to do this with every single developer that's going to come before us and assign. I don't like the idea of having board members meeting with the developers to craft something for their benefit, which is great, and I'm glad Dan is doing it, but I'm in the inspiration that this is going to be sort of to explore the foundation to develop as a policy that the staff will follow rather than us sitting with the staff. And I mean, that's not our job.
Yeah, I think the point is to develop a policy that we can live with for the future and not to establish some precedent that we would entertain that type of process again.
And the meetings, you know, if they meet, they should note when they're going to meet, and then it'll be an open meeting, and then anybody could come if they wanted to.
I think we would.
I mean, that would sort of get to his concern about the board meeting.
Uh-huh. ordinarily a meeting of the staff is not necessarily open to the public, but we will...
Well, I wasn't talking about the staff. I was just talking about the board, if the board members were meeting with the developer. I wasn't talking about the staff.
Okay.
Let me clarify.
I think, yeah, I think that's a good... I think that's a, probably a healthy suggestion, particularly in this situation. So maybe just as an exceptional practice in this situation, we'll do that. All right. Mr. Manager, the next item on our agenda is appointments to the Morgan Creek Trail Planning Committee.
Yes, this is somewhat old business. On April 20th, 2004, the Board of Aldermen authorized the creation of a Morgan Creek Trail Planning Committee. Tonight, the Board is asked to appoint neighborhood representatives and Board of Aldermen representatives to serve on the committee. And Dale has a brief presentation, I think mostly Dale, to bring everybody up to speed with something that's now almost 2 years old.
Good evening. I will run through this very, very quickly. Just a little bit of background. Back in, well, the vision for Morgan Creek Trail has been discussed both in the 1994 Parks and Recreation Master Plan and Vision 2020. The town has received some funding from the MPO to for design of a greenway trail along Carville's portion of Morgan Creek. And in December 2003, the Board of Aldermen authorized $10,000 from the bond funds to be used as a local match to these MPO funds. This map shows the location of a proposed trail in Carborough along Morgan Creek between Smith Level Road and University Lake. The town of Chapel Hill is also working on a trail in their jurisdiction over to 15501 and providing access over to Merritt Pasture. And then there's also a trail that runs along the Fan Branch that comes over into Southern Village. So this will provide a good both recreational and transportation connections in this part of our jurisdiction, including providing some access between Smith Level Road over to Jones Ferry and some of the retail and office locations over there, as well as access to the Carborough High School site, as well as Frank Porter Graham Elementary, which is in this location. So I think there are some exciting alternative transportation possibilities with this project. The purpose of the preliminary functional plan is to determine the best location for the trail, including the connections that I've just mentioned. It will provide a guide for any needed easements on the project. It will determine the best location and cost of future pedestrian bridges. And that's one reason why this process has been stalled. We've been waiting on some revised floodplain information from FEMA on the Chapel Hill side. They've been sort of their committee. They've got a similar committee that's been working since about 2001. They've also been stalled waiting for the revised floodplain information. And finally, the functional plan will provide some estimates for engineering, design, and construction. We had a very good response to the application process. I reordered these a little bit differently and grouped them by the neighborhood where they reside. We had two applicants from the Berry Hill subdivision, four from Canterbury Townhomes, one from the Highland Hills apartment homes, and then one from Weatherhill Point. And Mr. Vanke, I noted, has also been named by the Morgan Creek Valley Alliance as its representative on the committee. There also were a number of other representatives from other organizations. Some of these appointments are still pending, and when this was discussed last, the board also appointed Alderman Zaffron to be a representative from the board, and I believe he left it open to appoint additional representatives as well.
Didn't we appoint Alan Spalt?
I don't recall that. The minutes actually made a reference to the mayor contacting Alderman McDuffie. I believe that's the only...
Okay. This just to review this greenway as it's proposed will go from where to where? It'll go down to the town line, I assume. And it'll start where?
It will start at University Lake.
Start at University Lake.
That's okay. Proposed.
That's the idea, anyway. All right.
And then we'll connect to that greenway
hook up with the
Chapel Hills
right.
With hopefully the trail will go underneath Smith Level Road at the Morgan Creek Bridge.
Okay.
Can I just need a clarifying question. So on this list of the resolution, we're only responsible for I guess I'm a little confused. Are both Chapel Hill and I wasn't at this meeting, so you can see by the thing. So I didn't see the first presentation. But are Chapel Hill and Carrboro appointing all of these people in this class, for example, other than the Board of Aldermen, somebody from our planning board, somebody from the Recs and Parks Commission, and that, or in the alternative, are we just appointing? I'm a little confused.
That's a good question. The way we had left it at the last meeting was that for these various organizations,
mm-hmm.
we would ask them to appoint
okay.
someone to serve on the committee.
And they've done that.
And they've done that.
Mostly.
Mostly. Okay.
And then for the neighborhood representatives,
okay.
it was identified there would be, what was discussed last time was that there would be three slots for neighborhood representatives. We advertised this opening. We received these applicants.
Now I'm with you.
And so, if we're to do what our prior resolution called for, then we would take three of these eight people to put on here.
We need two more board reps.
Although, actually, Mr. Vanke, one of the representatives is supposed to be Morgan Creek Valley Alliance. Somebody from Morgan Creek Valley Alliance. Mr. Vanke is
already right. So they're one, two, three, four, five, six.
So it's really seven applicants we have before us,
right?
Rather than eight. I guess my reaction is you hate to make a committee too large, but on the other hand, this is exactly where. This greenway goes is going to have some significant impact on these various developments. So, is the board interested in picking from among these seven people, or?
It's a point. All of them. Half of them won't show up. I mean,
I'm going to accept that as a motion.
all seven.
I just want to add that I think it's important if these folks feel that they want to represent Bowling Creek and work on this greenway, I think it's
Morgan.
It's critical
Morgan
that
Creek.
Morgan Creek. What did I say?
Bowling Creek.
Oh, whoops. 40
that's okay.
Slip.
Yeah, that's right.
different Creek.
No, I mean, if they are, you know, interested in applying for it and doing the work, we certainly don't want to turn them away. Roll up your sleeves. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I take it at face value here that these folks are all they're interested in this project as opposed to opposed to the project. So with that assumption in mind,
I'll second Jackie's motion if that's you want to add a point. Because it'll shake out that there may be many people who will occasionally pop in to monitor, but that's fine. That provides a good line of communication.
Right.
They can keep up with what's going on. Yeah, the more the merrier. I'll second
that. And we probably want to take Jeff out of the mix since he's already
Jeff's
on the
already,
right.
Yeah.
Right. It's the seven already. People other than Jeff. He's
okay.
already on there. Okay, so it's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. I'm assuming that we're not appointing any more aldermen, that we're going to leave this in your capable hands.
I'd like to have backup. If at all possible. Anyone?
Oh,
like averting her gaze.
You too can win Ben Stein's money. Okay. We'll work it out.
Alex, please feel free to come back and ask us again on that matter as the need arises.
Yes. That's why I was averting in my gaze.
That's all right. Randy, you wanted to bring up a related
issue. Yeah, I wanted to bring up a related issue, and I don't know
folks down there got copies of this, but I wanted to propose not only for Morgan Creek, but with Bowling Creek. Here we go. I don't know how many more you need. That we create a Greenways Open Space and Preservation Commission. The rationale is to call for a commission that addresses the very distinctive knowledge base of these environs and focuses on the creation, educational programming, and stewardship of these preserved lands. And I think given that we have the Bowling Creek and the Adams Tract purchase and the Morgan Creek Planning Committee up and running, that this is a good time to create this commission to work in tandem with Rexham Park.
And I guess the question is essentially, Randy and I discussed this idea a little bit. The question is essentially whether the board would, you know, be interested enough in pursuing or at least discussing this type of thing that we should, whether essentially we should put this idea on some agenda for some upcoming board meeting where we could, have the chance.
That's a motion. I'll second.
Okay.
That's a motion.
You got it.
Okay.
All right.
I would want to make sure that in the agenda, I would want to make sure that when we discuss this as an agenda item, that, you know, since the proposal is to work in tandem with Recreation and Parks, that Recreation and Parks is involved in the conversation quickly.
Yeah. And actually, Absolutely. They have been.
I think the staff's been consulted a little bit on that already, but more
and the commission.
Involvement.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know when the commission happened, but. Okay. Well, that was moved and seconded that we consider that issue on some future agenda. All those in favor, please
aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
No. The matter passes unanimously. And with that, we are on the recommendation from the Transportation Advisory Board for intersection of Smith Level Road and Rock Haven Road.
Yes. Transportation Advisory Board recommends that a roundabout be built at the intersection of Smith Level Road and Rock Haven Road near Carborough High School rather than the currently planned signalized intersection. TAB has prepared a presentation with Board of Aldermen.
I'm Tom Hines, Charlie Mundo from the TAB, and we're going to discuss potential roundabout at Smith Level and Rock Haven, where Carborough High School is going to empty out. The key element here, as far as the construction goes, is the fact that the intersection is going to be altered. Whether it was as the town doing it as a part of the Smith Level Road project or the school coming in. So when you create these roundabouts, it's much harder to come in and do one after an intersection is already existing. So that's a key element. The entire Transportation Advisory Board recommends a roundabout here. It's great for traffic calming, for flow. The key things, though, are safety and the appearance factor as far as the town of Carborough is concerned. We feel like it's a quintessential Carborough project, and we'll explore that further. Right now, we're going to show a short video from a town in Wisconsin that had some roundabouts installed close to a school system, and I think the key thing for people to note is the diversity of the people who are speaking in the video. So.
I hope the volume, you all can hear this, we'll see.
No.
You're not going to hear it now. Where's the mouse? There we go.
Statistics show the roundabout saved lives. The Institute of Highway Safety is indicated in 24 different intersections that they've converted from a signalized intersection to a roundabout that there is a substantial reduction in severity of crashes, like a 90% reduction in fatalities, about a 76% reduction in injuries, and a 30 to 40% reduction in overall crashes at roundabouts as compared to signalized intersections.
You guys, since we've had these roundabouts in place, I don't believe there's been a reportable accident at these intersections or roundabouts. You've got to slow down.
There were some questions mainly on traffic calming, and he kind of convinced us that this was the answer, especially around the schools.
I'm Todd Gauthier, manager of Lamer's Bus Lines. I feel safer. He definitely, the roundabout directs the traffic and slows it down, so it definitely is safer in the area of the school district here where the roundabouts are located. And with this, it's just a continual flow, and there's it doesn't matter which way it comes. So from a school point, and as a parent of someone coming in to pick their kids up, the flow is so much better. Before, we had a lot of traffic issues with speed, having a hard time with the buses getting out of the schools at the end of the day because it's in traffic. The roundabout now gives brakes in traffic, slows them tremendously down. Really works well for that.
We'll have it, you know, right here in a high school zone, and we also have it on the east side of Brown County in another high school zone, and where you have they have their own vehicles, and a lot of them travel back and forth to school, and it's worked just fine.
One of the main movements was into a school with buses, and they had to make a left turn, and they were backed up for half a mile trying to make a left turn into the school. First day we opened them, I met the superintendent of schools out there and the principal, and we sat there and watched them, and first thing he said to me was, wow, I've never seen the buses come in there like that.
When traffic builds up, it responds much like a signed intersection, but it's times like now when the traffic is relatively light that everybody can move through with very little delay, and I think people recognize that now, that it's much more convenient.
I'm sold. They can build them wherever they want to build them. From a design perspective, from an operating perspective, that they're a great tool to control traffic at intersections.
I definitely support, and the biggest reason for it is there's a continual flow. There's not this stop and wait. I think the schools are very pleased with them.
And after about a week of getting used to driving and around about, things have been fine.
This thing is changing. Change is a tough thing for people to accept, but I think you just got to look at the information that's out there and look at what's best for the community. You know, safety is number one, and they're the best for safety.
So we'd like to know what the women in that community had to say about it.
Right. Now,
no women.
Was asked.
The community's not going to be around very long.
Well, all the women are opposed.
Let me just go through the four considerations here and highlight them. First and primary is the safety aspect. Okay, we Dale did a couple of counts on Smith Level Road, one on the 31st and one on February 1st. And here you see we had 7% and 11% of people that were at or below the posted speed limit around that intersection. One of the great things about this is it forces traffic to slow down. Everybody's moving in the same direction. You eliminate people running red lights or yellow lights. There aren't any lights. You have to slow down. By every safety criteria that we have looked at, you have lower frequencies and lower severities. And this is the case for vehicular accidents. It's the case for cyclists as well as pedestrians. So safety is the primary reason by far. The next thing we deal with is from an environmental perspective. When a car is idling, its emissions rate is at its worst. And this cuts down immensely on the amount of time cars spend idling. You have constant flow. Like the person said in the video, it does not mean there will not be backups, but there will be far fewer with a roundabout. You have less delay, the time factor as well. So the emissions and the environmental thing is another factor. We talked about the construction situation with regard to the fact that this intersection is going to be modified anyway. But some of the additional aspects are you have less impervious surface with a roundabout than you do with a standard signalized intersection. And we've got a slide we can show you that later. the costs are usually reduced. And we'll talk about that too, because I've talked with Steve Scroggs, but the bill that they're facing for a standardized intersection is fairly steep. And then that brings us to our last issue with regard to roundabouts, and it's something that is not as objective. It's much more subjective. And that has to do with appearance. We've got a few contrasting slides we can show you the differences between what this will look like. And we have gateways to Carrboro. We have Smith Lowell Road. We have Estes Drive. We have Old 86. And I would just ask you to contrast what we have now at Old 86 by Sunset Creek and what potentially would look something like this as far as a gateway to Carrboro. It would slow the traffic down. You could landscape a roundabout. We'd put a sculpture there. But dovetailing the appearance factor as far as coming into a town and looking at five or six lanes of asphalt, even though we're talking about a three-lane road coming down Smith Level, when you add the turn lanes that will be required into that high school standardized intersection, you're talking about four or five lanes of asphalt versus a two-lane roundabout. And I think it's something that the board should seriously consider. Now, logistically speaking, we have a situation where the school is going to be the entity constructing the roundabout, and they have time constraints on opening the school. But for the board to contact the school, I have spoken with Steve Scroggs, the superintendent, and his main concern is that the school opens on time, which we all understand. But they are not opposed to this. It seems to me that if the board got behind this this proposal and would want to put a roundabout there, that they could combine with the school to be able to pursue that with the Department of Transportation. And I'm not convinced that the department is going to be totally in favor of it, but I think that the case can be made, and they can come around. But that's where it is. The board would have to be actively advocating this in conjunction with the school system to get this done. Again, though, I from a personal perspective, I feel like that it would almost be if there was a problem with DOT and the time factor. I would rather see a situation in which we had a police officer directing traffic for a year out there at that intersection when school started and ended, and if that was what it took to get the roundabout there. So we have all the members of the TAB are here, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Jackie.
I've never been a big fan of roundabouts. But maybe this is a place to have one, you know. And actually, frankly, what convinces me the most is that you live at the end of the road. And I know that when you think that something is not going to be a good idea, that you pretty strongly advocate against it, and you're just as strongly advocating for this. You know, all the men in this slideshow spoke very well. I'm worried about the hill aspect of it, because, you know, Wisconsin's a little flatter. I'm worried about that. And I didn't see anybody walking across. And if we're going to be encouraging kids to walk to the high school and ride their bikes to the high school, and then we're also going to have, you know, people that have had their license for 3 days driving around the roundabout, you know, that makes me uncomfortable. And if somebody can convince me that that shouldn't make me uncomfortable, then I'd be in support of pursuing conversations with the school about it.
Actually, I think the school board put together a traffic design or a traffic study, and their the concern that they had in the traffic study, they recommended that they do not put a roundabout, but they use a signalized intersection in that traffic study. And the reason they said was because exactly what you had said about the students not being having experience in terms of the roundabout. In fact, that video was directly talking a lot about that, how students did quite well with it. And ironically, there are two roundabouts in the design for the new school. So
on the side itself.
But they're interior.
For the they're interior. That's right. So in terms of the... It appears that students are able to get to understand that quite quickly, at least in the examples that we've looked at. And there are a number of roundabouts that have been built around schools that where they have been able to see that the students figure it out quite quickly. And since they're not used to any traffic patterns, then a roundabout seems to work pretty well for them. But in terms of the pedestrian issue and coming down that hill, first off, people are flying down Smith Level quite quickly, and the DOT. There is going to have to be some kind of
signage
to indicate to get people to slow down as they enter into the roundabout. And the nature of these roundabouts are that they force people to drive, unless they happen to just fly on through and collide over the center ramp and have an accident, they have to slow down. They simply cannot go fast through that roundabout. So you have to try to slow them down as you come into it. So pedestrians seem to be able to do quite well. As you can see in this sign for this slide here, they have an area right here where they're able to cross that works. And if we go a little bit further, you can see here that the number of points that pedestrians actually have to deal with cars is greatly reduced when you are able to use a roundabout. So they've had some studies in Europe. They have not had ones in the States that we've been able to find that show that the accident rates with pedestrians is reduced. Yeah, some really high numbers. I think it was 80% the accident rate with pedestrians. In addition
to that's with high schoolers driving huge SUVs. Driving huge SUVs.
As far as I know, there's no studies in terms of American high schoolers and the pedestrians. But Heidi, you'd like to come up?
I just wanted to say a couple of things. Well, first of all, as mother of two teenage drivers, one of the things about the roundabout being right there at the school is it's the first thing they're going to learn how to drive during driver's ed. They take them out on I-40 the first day that they get their license. Mm-hmm. I mean, before they get their license.
Got one that just did it. Yeah.
They take them out on I-40. So to me, this compared to I-40, no comparison, really. And the other thing that I just wanted to mention about the speed is that David Harkey from the Highway Safety Research Center had said that this could not be, the roundabout itself could not be the means for slowing down the traffic. You would start slowing the traffic down, like at Heritage Hills or at the same distance the other direction, that by the time it got there, it would know that it had to slow down. But to actually negotiate the roundabout, you really have to be going, if it's designed correctly, and some of them aren't, but if it's designed correctly, you have to be going 15 or 20 miles an hour. You can't be flying through there. And, you know, when the person got hit a few weeks ago crossing 15501, I mean, those cars, if they don't have to stop, they're going 45 at least. Here, they could not be going 45. So, yeah.
I have two questions, and one maybe, I don't know, maybe Alex can answer this, but will there be a bus stop on Smith Level city bus, or will it go up into on the school road on Rock Haven Road?
Does anybody know the answer to that?
I thought it was on the school side.
I think it's on site.
Okay.
Yeah.
The new stop. There's currently one on Rock Haven,
right.
Up closer to the intersection.
But they'll adjust when they open, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, that's my first question. The second, Heidi, maybe you can answer this in terms of bikes and what's the proposal?
Well, I mean, bikes are vehicles for all intents and purposes.
Right.
And so they follow the same rules as the cars. And so because of that, they yield at the yield points and they have right-of-way just like the cars did. I mean, it should be very easy for the bicycles to move.
But Smith Level right now doesn't have...
Well, Smith Level, as a rule,
exactly.
You'd be crazy to be riding a bike on Smith Level. But if you were, this would probably be the safest part of it driving.
Right.
Although novice cyclists could still use the pedestrian routes.
Yeah.
So that's what they've found in the past, is that more experienced cyclists go ahead and cycle through with the traffic. And because the traffic has already slowed down so much, it feels safe. But
frankly, novice is going to be on Smith Level.
Right.
Not for very long.
But you will potentially have your teenagers coming on their bicycles, hopefully, and you could still use the pedestrian crossways.
Right.
They foresee, though, the pedestrian crossways would be pulled back slightly from the roundabout itself.
That's where the design comes in, is the crosswalks are pulled back so that you have these separators that separate cars and get them into the roundabout. And the crosswalks are not up at the edge of the roundabout.
Right.
They're further back down the road so that they have less space to go across to get to that median and then cross on over.
And they're divided, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Now, and we would probably see something like we have on Weaver Street.
Yeah.
I mean,
or Greensboro in front of the Century Center with extra signage on the median itself.
Right, but there's like a divided space for them to walk.
Right.
Now, and I'm assuming that there would still be a crossing guard at Rock Haven.
That would be up to the school system.
That's,
okay.
Yeah, I mean,
but we could recommend.
They're going to next year. by the time this gets built, they're going to be paying for it.
Right.
John has been waiting patiently, and then Joel.
Thank you. First of all, I want to commend you on the work you have done on this, and you folks are very diligent about doing your research, and I respect also the amount of time you spend on researching this and getting us all the facts, and including a video from Wisconsin. And the expertise that the TAB has are people that I think it speaks by itself on why you folks are making this recommendation. I have to say I'm sold out, not because of the video, but because of the work you folks have done, your commitment to advocate for what you believe is in the best interest of Carborough and safety. I mean, I think the public safety issue and the environmental issues are something that is something Carborough embraces, and we should actually, I think it's a real proposal to that will give a face, you know, to what Carborough is all about. Regarding speed on the slope, there's a roundabout. Those of us who commute to Durham, there is a similar steep slope on 751 and Irwin Road, and believe me, I drive there every day, and I can tell you that slows you down. And there's no signs, and there's no much, but that really slows you down. The other thing is, this is a school, and every school has to have blinking lights, warning lights. There is during the school hours. By law, they have to have, and it is a speed limit. That's the first thing you have to learn before you pass the driver license test. That is 25, is it 25 or 15? I think it's 25.
25.
Right? 25 school driving speed. So, and I do believe usually when there are neighborhoods and people walking to school, there are crossing guards in there. But I am in full support of your idea, and I thank you for doing this research.
Joel, and then I'm going to jump.
I have just some questions. I don't know if the board had a chance to read the email from Mr. Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mr. Butcher had some comments about that were negative about roundabouts. And the one question I had that he had mentioned as a comment was that that the roundabout plan would require additional taking of right-of-way on the lots on the west side of Smith Level Road, and could you comment on that?
Who is Mr. Butcher? I'm sorry.
Mr. Butcher, he's a resident.
On the west side?
That's what he said. That's what he said. So I'm just asking questions.
I think that would be a question for DOT, actually.
We do have designs that were preliminary designs for the roundabout at that location. Dale, we have preliminary designs on that ahead of time.
Okay.
Attachment C that you have. That was from a previous...
When they were going to do the apartment development.
Right. But would it take, I guess the question is, would it take more right-of-way, or would it be dependent upon the design?
I guess the first step would be to look at the, I don't remember what it looks like, but then we give you the standard plus the roundabout design so that you can see the difference in the amount of land.
There may be some additional land that is required in that circular area, which you can explore.
Right. Mm-hmm. But there may also be additional land that would be required depending on, you know, how many turn lanes they were going to put on the standard intersection as well.
Okay. I'm not finished yet.
Okay. Just going to ask what your next question
is. No, you go ask your own question. And again, how do you, because one of his comments was the roundabout design is exceedingly unfriendly and dangerous to pedestrians. Must cross Smith Level Road to access the high school, and there is no stop in traffic flow. I'm reading directly from it. And cars concerned with roundabouts will be inattentive to pedestrians, given the fact that, you know, there's just not a lot of roundabouts in North Carolina. And I guess I would ask you to address that comment as well.
Well, my response to that tends to be along the nature of safety and speed.
Mm-hmm.
And the example of the pedestrian who was killed, if there were not four lanes of traffic to cross,
right,
and if the speed limit was 25 or 20 miles per hour as opposed to 45 miles per hour, that person may not have been killed. And it has to do with it's like you say, it's driver awareness as well as it is pedestrian awareness. But the studies have all shown that, again, the percentage of pedestrians who are injured in a roundabout as opposed to a standard 32 contact point vehicular intersection is less.
I guess what I would say is that what we have given you is data that was given to us by the HSRC, and I'm not sure where Mr. Butcher is getting his data, but that everything we found did not say that it was unsafe for pedestrians. And the other thing is that I think they are a little confusing to drivers, but I think that works in their favor. I mean, that's why one of the reasons you slow down is because you can't just zip around it. You have to see what's going on in front of you. And I can't answer that other than to say that we gave you the facts that we got from the HSRC. Okay.
We have seen a number of studies. I think that the one point that they have said is that there tends to be public opposition by certain individuals, and that public opposition tends to evaporate very quickly when people start to use them. In every study that we've looked at, and we have looked at in New England, Wisconsin, we've looked at the traffic counts for the one in at Irwin Road that just recently was built. Every single study that we've looked at, including the ones in Europe, have shown that there's been a very high decrease in terms of the severity and the frequency of accidents.
Now, just for me, because it would be helpful, if there was an example of a more, you know, I hate to be more particular, but a southern roundabout in sort of a similar area. Because I don't know.
You mean besides Irwin Road?
Besides Irwin Road, because
there's one at State?
Yeah.
Well, the one at State is right here.
Right.
So you can see that being used right there.
But that's in the campus.
That's on campus, though. I'm talking about, you know, this one would be
on campus,
but I will say there are 20,000 cars that use that every day.
Well,
so. I mean, I'm not saying I'm necessarily opposed to the idea of a roundabout. I'm just trying to explore all
of
these.
I would say probably Irwin Road is the closest thing we've got to us here in Chapel
Hill.
See,
but Irwin Road, the problem with Irwin Road is it is in a non-residential area. I mean, I drive that quite frequently, and most of the time I'm moving right around that roundabout all by myself, which is really different than what would happen here. But one thing that I think is in favor of this is that there's only one offshoot from the main road instead of having the two. Now, I'll tell you where there is another roundabout, and that's on off of
Ephesus. There's one on Ephesus, but that's not really a very well-designed road.
But that is, well, but it's there.
Well, I mean, it isn't because you can easily cut across it. It doesn't make
right.
It
feel.
Okay.
Alex, then just real quickly to try and wrap this up, because this is a conversation that seems to happen all the time, which is that people have all of these intuitive objections and fears. The fact of the matter is, from the Institute for Highway, or both the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, the HSRC, as well as Brown County, the numbers always tell the tale, and they always tell the same tale. The tale that they tell is a dramatic reduction in both vehicle and pedestrian accidents, both in the number and severity, period, consistently, no deviation. That's it. So, I mean, we can scare ourselves silly.
Well, I'm not saying I'm scared. I'm just thinking you have to look at both parts of the issue, and I'm not saying that I have
sure.
to right
no,
now.
I understand that, and I'm not even necessarily taking a position of advocacy in this case. I'm just asking folks to... Just look at the data, though.
Well, okay. I have a question that is entirely separate from that.
There's a whole other, which you may be getting into. There's a twist here.
That's sort of where we're headed.
Yeah.
And I guess, well, let me start here. I'm completely with Steve Scribes on the point that they're moving along on a tight schedule, and they're sticking to that schedule, and the school is opening. I'm not interested in doing anything that'll delay the school opening. Carrboro High School opening. One thing that bothers me a little bit about this is that we could easily have had a really intelligent discussion that would have been far easier to do something about 6 months or a year ago about this topic. And I don't understand how we got here, because
we had actually recommended the roundabout be considered, but the developer said that because of, and it sounded like it was mainly the discussion about inexperienced drivers not being able to negotiate it, that they recommended the standard intersection. So we had recommended it, but it never
But here's my point is, and you know, what's done is done, but it would have been helpful for y'all to make the case at the time in a more pointed way, because the reality is that where we are now is they have an approved permit, an approved development project, and they're required to build the intersection in the way that they're required to build it. And to come back now and revisit all of that stuff and reopen all of that, I mean, first of all, it's not clear to me that let me say this. I believe, and Mr. Attorney, you correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I believe that the school system would essentially have to ask for permission to modify their plan to head in this direction. And so at a very initial level, let me say, it's not really up to us in the sense that the notion of even entertaining the discussion is not really up to us in the sense that it's their project to pursue either under the permit that they have now or under some proposed change to it. I'm not opposed to a roundabout here. But I'm really concerned that we've gotten to this point in the conversation, and are now taking a look at this. The other issue is that this is, and you addressed it to some extent, but this is a state maintained road, it's essentially old 86 is what it is. We don't call it by that name down there, but that's what it is. Alex and I had the distinct pleasure of having a very long afternoon in Raleigh, not so terribly long ago, meeting with about 1,000 engineers from DOT, hopefully without engendering any hard feelings in any direction, essentially what they said is, Town of Carrboro, your vision for Smith Level Road does not work based on any model that we see as valid as traffic engineers, and we are and I'm not talking about the administrators there. I'm saying that the engineers themselves, the licensed engineers themselves, were essentially saying to us, we're not willing to put our engineering seal of approval on the kind of stuff that you're talking about on Smith Level Road. And not to be defeatist about it, but we weren't even talking about anything half as unusual as this. I just have this fear. And by the way, we need to have a conversation as a board about what else they had to say at this meeting about Smith Level Road. The practical reality of this, I can't be very optimistic about it because you really don't even need to persuade us as much as you need to persuade the school system, and you don't even need to persuade the school system nearly as much as approaching DOT about it.
I think you're correct.
That's the reason we came to you, because we have the ability to come to you. And I don't think this is going to happen unless the town and the school system go, this is what we want, in a strong way. I just don't think it will happen. And they all, as far as the timing, I agree, the timing's not great. But from my perspective, for the town especially, not to go the last mile to see if it can happen will be a gateway to Carrboro that's marked by another 5-wide lane, despite the fact that you're going to have 3 lanes coming down the road on a new design. That's going to be the entrance to Carrboro city limit, is a bunch more signal lights and masked arms, and that's going to be the gateway to Carrboro. So from my perspective, it's let's see if we can make this happen and have something that we're proud of from a transportation perspective, as opposed to doing what DOT says is normal.
Well, I'm definitely not proposing that we do what DOT says in any way with respect to Smith Level Road. But I just, you know, I got to tell you, looking at this proposal after having been in that room and seeing what the reaction is to the very notion of a merely 3-lane road. Mm-hmm. I know what they're going to say. What they're going to say is if the kind of scenario, and this is essentially what they proposed, by the way, with respect to our proposed 3-lane profile. This is what we were hearing from DOT, is that what they would like to do or what they'd be willing to consider doing in order to accommodate us on the 3-lane road proposal is that instead of any traffic engineer at DOT being called upon to put their engineering seal on the plans, that we would hire an engineer as Town of Carrboro to draw up the plans and put his or her seal on them, that DOT would pay for that, that DOT would essentially give us money to administer the project and to build the project, and that thereafter, DOT would have nothing to do with that road anymore, and that long-term maintenance of the road would be turned over to the Town of Carrboro, and from their point of view, we would have created a big mess that would be then our responsibility to deal with, and
you know, I guess the concern the staff raised at that meeting and after that meeting is basically the money that we get from the state is for road maintenance is enough money to pay for maintenance of, you know, like the road that you live on, Heidi, or I don't know where the rest of y'all live, but those type of neighborhood streets, it's adequate. But when you look at the really heavily used and heavily traveled streets in town, what we get in Powell bill funds would in no way begin to approach what it would cost to maintain Smith Level Road, even a short section of Smith Level Road. And I don't want to go on about this too long, but I'm just saying, like, I know what they're going to say. I know what their proposal will be is, then you build it and you maintain it and it'll be yours forever. And, I'm pretty far from at this point from being willing to consider those types of proposals from DOT.
Well, let me just jump in.
Can we respond to that?
Well, actually, can I help you out a little bit?
Okay.
This is the same DOT that they're redoing the road that they did on I-40 that they're in a multi-million dollar litigation for. So I'm not so sure that I want to concede our vision of them.
I'm not talking about conceding anything to them.
No, I know, but I'm not so sure about I want to concede the vision that we have for Smith Level Road yet without
I'm not talking about that either.
The discussion. Well, you know, it's a discussion that was interjected in the conversation.
I think their engineers signed off on I-40, didn't they?
Right, and indeed they did.
And it's probably been fired now, too.
Probably not.
They are.
You know, but in any event, I think that we probably need to step back a minute and say, what do we lose by asking people to change their mind? And if we and we're not asking the school system to stop building Carrboro High School. We're just asking them to reconsider the decision and see if we can do it. And if they say no, then we say, okay, fine, we've made the attempt. Or we say, let's find out somebody who can say yes to the idea. And it's just a matter of where do we want to put the resources. If we want to stop here, then we need to have a discussion about we don't want to ask them, or either we do. And that seems to me to be the issue. Whether we get it or not.
If I can just compress all this and see if we can wind it up, what Mark's discussion really comes down to is that we had a deal with these guys a year and a half ago, and we don't have a deal anymore.
Right.
That's the bottom line. They've pulled out. They've backed out. And so we are, at this point, at an impasse. We are nowhere. There is no plan on the table because there is no one who is going to administer and build a plan that is acceptable to both parties at this time.
Right.
So, notwithstanding everything that you just said, Mark, which I agree with as a practical matter, but where we are is nowhere.
Yeah, right.
And so, frankly, I don't see any harm whatsoever in seeing if the school board is interested in pursuing this, and if they are, and I think that's all that these guys are asking us to do, is just lend our support to the idea, see if the school board is interested in pursuing it. If we are two parties that are interested in pursuing it together, then that's another element that we pursue in whatever the hell we end up with in terms of some mechanism to get work done out there. I mean, right now what we've got are TIP funds, which are programmed, but sitting, there's no mechanism to get them done. We won't even go into all this crap right now.
Right.
But I'm sorry, Jackie, but I'll just wrap it up real fast. That's where we're at. We're in vaporware, we're in vaporware land, but we do have program TIP funds for whatever comes out of this at the back end.
I'm very interested in hearing what these folks have been waiting to say.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that we realize this is very late coming to you, and what happened was that after the CUP was passed, we got more information about the roundabouts, and it just kept coming in. We were actually kind of looking for negative things, but we never found it. We just kept finding more and more positive stuff, and we felt that as an advisory board, it would be incompetent of us not to bring this to your attention with the school that's going in. And then more recently, just as it happens in light of so many accidents that have happened on city streets around here. And I did actually exchange a few emails with Jim Dunlop at DOT, and asked him about the roundabout, and he first made it sound like it was impossible because of the number of cars that were there every day. So the traffic counts I looked at for Smith Level compared to Irwin Road or Pullen Road were way less. They were like a third of what they were at Irwin, actually less than that. And the thing about how you ride on Irwin Road when there are no cars there, well, that's the way it would be most of the time at this intersection. There would be two real peak, actually one really peak hour in the morning. Then there'd be another peak in the afternoon when the kids were going home, and another peak when the people were going home from work. But the real crunch would be that one time in the morning. And so I guess the question is, do you want to build a road that will take, you know, everybody through at 7:30 in the morning and at 5 in the afternoon, or do you want to build a road that takes everybody through during the day, but then occasionally you have to back up a little bit? And
oh, I've been on those backups. They take a long time.
The other aspect of it, which I think DOT tries to pursue, is this whole aspect of capacity. And if you have a signalized intersection, you're going to have a backup at between 7:30 and 8:30 in the morning regardless. I mean, everything they want to try to tell you with regard to capacity, you can, I mean, it's never ending. That's why they wanted a five-lane road to start with. That's why they wanted a four-lane double parkway if they couldn't get the five-lane road. That's why they're asking for a three-lane road with a middle turn section, which for half of that entire project is virtually useless. And what I can't understand is why,
Tom, they've backed off from even there.
Well, what I can't understand is why the economic aspect of this does not force them to have to go. You know, if the town would like a road that is what they want, and it costs half again as much as what DOT proposes, why does not anybody in the state government go, let them build it?
But doesn't Hal Burton have the contract? Is that what it is?
Tom, you're preaching to the choir.
It's a Democratic version of that, but yeah.
It ain't selling in
New York. Well, I go back to the aspect with regard to this project of, I feel like we would be better off putting a policeman at that intersection and let the school system put a left turn lane coming out of Rock Haven and put a policeman there for 2 hours a day and have something that we can agree would be much better if that's what it takes. But it's going to be the school system and you guys getting together and going, this is what we want. How can we make this work for the school system so they can open on time, and then we'll see what happens when the Smith Level project eventually.
But here's the, and I'm not trying to be, overly negative about this, but what the permit that was approved by the Board of Aldermen calls for what? Remind me there right now. It's going to be
signalized.
A signalized intersection with turn lanes.
And how many travel lanes?
Oh,
the packet, eh?
Yeah. How did we do that?
You mean you didn't read every single attachment?
You know we did.
B. Ah. Oh, well, that must have been the problem. That's that was what it was. So actually, I can't find B.
Nice truck.
So C? To have a
there it is.
Okay. So it looks like...
I never can read that.
That's totally uninformative to me.
I don't have the attachment.
This is Smith Level. This is the square.
It's a travel lane and a turn lane in each direction.
Yeah. Maybe. Let's see.
Okay, here we go.
Right.
Okay, so this is Smith Level, and this is Rock Haven. And the area that is shaded is the new construction area, as I understand it. So they're constructing a turn lane, and they're also widening this section of Rock Haven. And then there's also some widening down on this section of Smith Level to add a left turn lane coming from the from the south and for a through lane. And then these are the signal poles and the wires to span wires to hold those up.
Okay. And I guess, you know,
Scruggs did just get the estimate for that intersection, and he was pretty floored by how much it was. So.
Mm-hmm. And so what would the roundabout?
Well, we haven't gotten an estimate from DOT on that, so we don't know.
I'd love to see the differential.
Yeah. Well, I can picture how the DOT engineering mind works, and it works basically along these lines, that they see a four-lane profile right here, even if two of them are turn lanes, and that what you're talking about isn't as wide, and therefore...
Unless they have four lanes there, it'll be much easier for them to have four lanes all the way down.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Their initial response to your email was they tried to steer towards a multi-lane roundabout.
Yeah,
an example from Winston-Salem.
Yeah, now you're talking about
that style.
Yeah, we aren't talking about a multi-lane roundabout.
Yeah, clearly.
So, Mark, are you arguing that we shouldn't pursue this because you anticipate DOT will object to it?
No, I'm just trying to interject a really huge reality check into the discussion, which is that you're talking about the idea that you're throwing around is that a whole lot of pieces are going to fall into place in just the right way to make this happen. And, you know, I guess the issue is some, I think Alderman Brown said earlier, what do we have to lose by bringing this forward? And I don't know, but I think it's actually seriously worth thinking about what the answer to that question is or might be, because what it might be that we have to lose is some credibility with DOT and some ability to have a discussion about, I mean, in other words, it gets down to this, that it seems to me that the way that we'll prevail in negotiations with DOT is by being focused on the most essential points of disagreement with them. And, you know, having this ongoing fight about the width of Smith Level Road, having an ongoing fight about whether to add bike lanes and sidewalks on Estes Drive extension. It seems to me like it would be a problem that would really be worth solving. But I guess what I'm saying is, I just don't see them caving on in every different direction at the same time. So that's just—it's a strategic issue.
I actually look upon this as the potential for the great thing down the road. If we fight this fight and win this fight, then look at Estes Drive again, and you're going to deal with the same thing on them wanting to extend the three lane into that intersection, and that's potentially another. I mean, again, it boils down to the contrast. You know, you can have the Sunset Creek Old 86 intersection, and they can lay as much asphalt as they're going to lay, or you can try to do something different. And I just think it's worth the attempt.
Well, why don't we? It is essential that the school board needs to be behind this proposal too. I think you're hearing some very significant interest from this board, notwithstanding what a jerk I am being about it. But we need to hear from the school board about their interest in it. And I don't disagree with anything that you're saying as far as the merits of the idea from the aesthetic point of view and from safety point of view and from traffic speed point of view. I just, you got to convince a whole bunch more people than me.
I would just argue, though, that in the state of negotiations where we are right now, we are really in the realm of the academic, frankly. So moving on a parallel track to interest another party in this, I frankly don't see how it can cause any injury unless we reach a point where it becomes a sticking point in those negotiations, and we can deal with that later. That's my thinking about it.
Jackie.
I've met very few windmills that I wouldn't tilt at. So, I'd support asking the school board to see, you know, like to reconsider this. I know we have something to lose with DOT, but, you know, what's that line? Nothing don't mean nothing if there's nothing left to lose. If we're starting from kind of zero, why not ask, you know, my whole feeling about state and federal government right now is let's at least ask for what we want and let's at least say what we want. So, yeah, I'd be in favor of, we're definitely not going to get it if we don't ask for it.
No, that's the truth.
So the next steps would be to connect with the Chapel Hill Culver City School, Steve Scruggs?
Right. So could we have staff draft a letter?
Not Steve Scruggs, but
the board. The board. Okay. Could we have the staff draft a letter to the board? Well, that would be my motion.
But just with this proviso that we phrase it in such a way that we're interested in gauging their interest.
Right.
That we're not trying to push them in a corner to get them to do something, being the permit issuing authority. That's I think a conflict that Mark.
Right.
Well, we could start by saying, are you interested in saving a lot of money?
Right.
Yeah. We could. Dear school,
we can
save
you some big bucks.
How about a person or two?
According to our agenda, it's now 8:35.
Right. Yeah. All right. So it's been moved and seconded that we send such a letter. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed.
We'll take 10.
Pass it unanimously.
I would like to thank the alderman for sort of taking us
thank
on.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
That was great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Don't go.
we're going to do this.
Have us a little Valentine's Day, weekly. Maybe? or at least get to watch
Valentine's
the
Valentine's Day, be sleeping.
Or at least get to watch the Daily Show. Yeah.
Your Valentine date with Michael Stewart, John Stewart. Okay. All right. Let's take a look at these. Oh, so we're returning to our agenda here, and it was suggested during the break that we defer to another night our consideration of a discussion of the capital improvements program. I'm sorry to do that to staff who some staff members who waited here to participate in or listen in on that discussion, but that's just where we are. It's late. And if I
Oh, on Valentine's Day. Oh, my goodness.
All right. Wow. Who's that? All right. Anyway, where we are is we are making appointments to committees.
Just do them one by one?
Yeah. Let me say that if we start with if we begin with a Board of Adjustment, let's just run through these and we'll do a sort of tentative version of this, and if it seems reasonably balanced when we're done, then we'll move it and adapt it. How's that? But as exciting as the Board of Adjustment
well,
is.
Well, how about this? I'll make it easier for you. I'll be the appointed person on the Board of Adjustment, but not serve on the Planning Board.
Okay, so Joel will take Board of Adjustment, and I guess what you're suggesting is you're deferring to Randy on the Planning
yes.
Board.
Yes.
But I'm going to come.
Absolutely.
And make come.
Okay.
All right, Dan, congratulations, Appearance Commission. Transportation Advisory Board had some interest from John and Joel there.
You're staying on appearance.
Pardon?
Is Alex staying on appearance?
No, you're
in. No, you just got it.
Why do I have it?
Because you express so much as the slightest interest in the matter.
That's a mistake.
All right, well, then you're getting it because you're the most junior member of the board, then, if you prefer.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. It's getting late.
I actually am interested in it.
Oh, okay.
All right. You go safe.
Is that okay, Dan?
I'm not sure I would go as far as describing this being saved, but in any case, reassigned. All right, so Jackie. Transportation Board, John and Joel express some interest. Rec and Parks, Joel, Randy, and Jackie.
I'm with the Board of Adjustment, and I have more interest in the Human Service Commission than I do. Not to say that I'm against recreation. And what are you talking about?
I'm not even looking at that. I'm looking at.
I super much want recreation and parks.
Okay, I'll work with you.
Okay.
What are we doing about TAV?
It seemed like in. We're coming back to it in just a moment. Is I think what we're doing. So Jackie is saying.
Recreation and parks.
She feels strongly about.
Yeah.
I'll attend that as well. Or.
Second
word.
Okay, well, you're doing the planning board, which is a big one. And this is another big one.
Cemetery Commission, yes. Economic Sustainability Commission, uh-huh. I'm just looking down the list because I want to have some clarity about being reasonably balanced in how we're approaching this.
I have a strong desire to serve on the Human Services Commission.
And I have, I've done it for many a year, and I think Joel would be good on it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's the kind of spirit we're looking for here.
Because she can be real good at going to meetings once a week for the next 3 months,
I do not want to serve as the board liaison for the cemetery commission.
Okay. Joel is done with the cemetery for hopefully at least like 40 years.
To the Lord calls me.
Did you say Dan volunteer for that one?
I don't know, John. You're Dan. Yes, my name is here.
Yeah, there you go.
How often does the cemetery commission meet, Joel?
Depends on...
depends on if there are issues.
As needed.
So then,
John, you this
yeah.
is, I think it'll really broaden your horizons, John.
All right, believe in transcendental life.
Damn, we got to get you on something there, bud. Come on.
Transportation Advisory Board. I know John and Joel, y'all both are down here for that. I know John expressed some particular interest in that, I guess, in connection with he wants to work on this yellow bike proposal and that kind of stuff. I don't know.
I can serve as the alternate for the Transportation Advisory Committee. How about that? Because I am interested in the buses since I do ride them now.
Oh, for the there's also the issue of is it on here? The Transit Partners Committee, where we really I think it is very important that we have strong representation in the Transit Partners Committee.
I think it's important that we have two people, an alternate for that.
Joel? I think, is it even about an alternate, or do we actually have two?
All right. Okay.
I just mentioned to you all that unless the committee changes, that meeting has always been during the day, so if that makes a difference to anybody.
Huh. Eek. That might be a problem.
Yeah.
In fact, the next meeting is February 22nd at, I think it's 8 a.m.
Boy. Not that I can't get
it. Well, here's what, let me switch gears with y'all for a minute. And I'm assuming Alex has been so involved in the Transportation Advisory Committee, also known as the MPO. Is that right?
Yeah.
That I'm assuming Alex will remain our primary person on the TAC. Will continue to be our appointee to the TAC. I want to suggest that we appoint at we have traditionally had an alternate person as an appointee. I want to suggest that we have even two alternates, if need be, but that we it's just very important to be represented at that committee. Anyway, I would like to. I am interested in being an alternate for the TAC.
That works for us.
And a second alternate would be good as well. Chapel Hill does that as well.
Yeah, it just ends up that they're.
Yeah.
It's just better not to be unrepresented there.
I can do that.
That works.
So Mark Barron.
All right.
And
so Alex. First and second alternate. All right. That's fine. Arts Committee, Joel and Jackie, can you guys thumb wrestle that out real quick for us?
Doesn't make any difference.
I'd like it.
All right. Jackie. Triangle J, Council of Governments. Right now is Alex and Joel.
I'm jettisoning that. I haven't been in a while, and it just conflicts with my schedule.
What is its schedule?
It meets bimonthly, 5 o'clock in the evening five if you want dinner, business meeting at 6.
It's just too difficult for me. It's just too difficult for me to be able to do it.
I really am trying not to add a lot more evening meetings to my schedule.
So I can't do it.
The COG board doesn't do a whole lot. It's useful to monitor what they're doing. The most important liaison we have with the COG is on staff level through Bob Seppi and others who are doing consulting work for us, which they do a great job.
So you can assign stuff?
With the understanding that we don't expect you to go to every one of these meetings, I'm going to ask you to do that for us, Dan.
All righty.
The Environmental Advisory Board, I'm happy to defer to somebody else if
you want me to do it.
There are four people there who expressed moderate interest in that.
Okay. I don't have to do it.
Well, you're
in the
according to this, you're in the no interest category. But
Dan, you.
All right, I'm not hearing a lot of reaction to that. Cable TV.
I can give that one up.
Alex, how can you not be our cable TV person?
Because he's in the no interest. And the two people that showed a moderate interest are John and Dan.
And they probably didn't mean to do it.
But it's in black and white.
What's the schedule? What's that, Joe?
It does not meet very often.
There are no regular meetings. It's a kind of a
little impact.
There you go.
John.
The cable guy.
As long as they don't meet.
Be the cable guy.
Okay.
That's funny.
Economic Sustainability Commission. Alex has been doing that and would like to stay.
You know, I wonder if that's one, because there's so much happening these days, that could have two board appointees, because there's just so much going on with that. And Dan's the other one that showed a strong interest. Maybe Alex and Dan, and they could.
I would love to have Dan join me.
There you go.
All right, well, then let's do that. We'll put both of them there. Advisory board, still no strong word on that. We'll come back to that. Let's take a look at this last page. Animal Control Board of Appeals.
Jackie did say.
I like it.
I'll be the alternate.
Okay, thanks.
All right. John, are you and I really going to let go? It's been a special time between the two.
Oh, I really have enjoyed, Judge Mark Chilton, and the people in the People's Court, but I'm willing to give that up.
Okay, all right. So there it is. So Jackie and Joel as an alternate. Really, it's not so much an alternate as that there have to be three people there in order for the board to meet, and we have two citizens who are on there as well. So there's not, with the two of you on there, there'll be four. And anyway, it's mix and match. Any three of four. Home Program Review Committee.
Dan was very interested in that one.
That's fun with me.
I'm waiting to.
Is that
to get that?
Okay. And then Chapel Hill Township Park and Educational Campus Master Plan Work Group.
I'll do that.
They couldn't get that to spell out anything clever. Sorry, Randy, you want to do that?
They've been meeting already, right? Yeah,
yes, but they need your help. okay, so what are we not got at this point? Environmental Advisory Board and TAB, we hadn't quite worked that out.
And there's last page.
And the sidewalk review and the community leadership.
One more page. Well, actually, we already took action on the Community Leadership Council matter,
right,
which was that you appointed me and Steve Stewart.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can I ask a question about that? Not to get us into a discussion, but
sure.
Mm-hmm. I wonder it's helpful for us for Steve to go.
It's very helpful.
Is it?
Yeah. When we hired him, let's just say, because you weren't involved in the process of when we hired the new town manager, one of the things we wanted was a town manager that was a little bit more involved in the leadership roles of and presenting our position with other governments. And last year we had a discussion about this, and I still think it's still very important for us to have our chief operating officer there.
And I think they, I think it was requested.
Right.
I mean, that or that was their suggestion from the council itself.
And probably you.
What?
Yeah.
No, they. That's what I mean. That the two people that were appointed is who they asked that the manager and the mayor.
Right. And so that's why we've done it.
All that concentrated power.
It's
knowledge. It's the knowledge that's important.
Yeah. Okay. The Coalition for Public Transportation, assuming Alex would continue to serve on that for us.
That's actually the description. It's morphed in its charge. It deals with urban issues more generally than.
And it's not called that now.
It's called the Urban Metropolitan Coalition. And it doesn't meet very often. It's like twice a year, so I can do that.
It's quite an urbane group. all right, Alex is going to, so we'll put Alex down for that. And then Sidewalk Review Committee, Jackie, we have three members on that committee.
Its work is probably close to being done, but it still needs to be operational, and it does need more than just one person, because when it meets, it needs a group. So.
And what it is for those of you who are newer to this board is basically when a block or a street appeals and says. We think either we shouldn't have a sidewalk that you're proposing to build, or it should be on the other side, or you shouldn't cut down this tree, or whatever.
Yeah.
This is the body to whom such issues are brought.
And because we've gone through the first phase of sidewalks and the planning for those, it'll probably be a while before we enter the second phase.
Yeah,
so.
But in the second phase, it'll be real active again.
So we do need people on that, and we need more than just me, but you won't have to do anything for a while.
I'm joining the now.
Okay. Right. Another one of those committees, John.
Jackie, John.
I like trees and sidewalks.
Joel, Dan, somebody.
Well, I'm more interested in the transit partners, if that's still
in play.
In play.
Can we do Alex and Dan on the transit partners?
Yeah, sure. We definitely need two.
Would that be acceptable? And Joel, will you be on our sidewalk committee then?
Sure.
All right. So, all right, now that is finally the last page. Now, we need to go back to Environmental Advisory Board. I'm willing to stay. Or
I'll do. I'm comfortable.
Randy, do you want to?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
If everybody's comfortable with that, let's put Randy there. That would be great. And then Transportation Advisory Board.
I really want to do that.
Joel says she really wants to do it.
Well, then let's put Joel there.
It's DOT.
That's the only one I really
thumb wrestling.
Has a strong interest.
I have a really strong interest in the DOT.
Can't you share
these?
Yours
what? Really, really strong.
Yeah.
How about really, really,
really, really strong?
I pushed a child out.
I think there are things people can share.
We can share. There can be two of us.
Yeah. We did that with ESC.
We can be two of us.
We'll do two on that. All right. So let me run it down real quick. And after I say this, then somebody should say that's their motion that they're making.
Okay.
Assuming you're comfortable with it, but it's Board of Adjustment, Joel. Planning Board, Randy. Appearance Commission, Jackie. Transportation Advisory Board, John and Joel. Recreation and Parks, Jackie. Cable TV.
And Randy, right?
Well, I'm just going to attend. Jackie's in charge.
Okay. So it's Recreation and Parks, just Jackie. Cable TV Committee, John. Human Services Commission, Joel. Cemetery Commission, John. Economic Sustainability Commission, Alex and Dan. Environmental Advisory Board, Randy. Arts Committee, Jackie. Triangle J Council of Governments, Dan has been drafted. Transportation Advisory Committee, Alex. And Advisory Committee, that's the MPO, the Regional Planning. That's Alex. I'm the first alternate, and Dan is second alternate. Animal Control Board of Appeals, Jackie and Joel. Home Program Review Committee, Dan, Chapel Hill Township Park and Educational Campus Master Plan Work Group, quite a string of nouns, Randy, Transit Partners Committee, Alex and Dan, Sidewalk Review Committee, Jackie, John, and Joel, the Metropolitan Coalition, Alex, and Community Leadership Council, me and Steve Stewart.
So moved.
Okay. Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
Now,
incredibly.
One more.
All right. Now, on the final item on our agenda here is discussion of making appointments to the Leadership Advisory Committee for Carolina North. Let me bring you all up to speed on events in the last 24 hours, which is that yesterday sometime, or Friday, apparently the folks, the mayor of Chapel Hill contacted Ken Brown and Chancellor Meeser and discussed with them and gained consent to have four people appointed from Chapel Hill rather than three. My understanding of that situation is that we would be at liberty to appoint up to four people if that's what we wanted to do to that committee as well. However, we really could not, as a practical matter, have four aldermen on that committee because four aldermen would be a quorum of our board and would have to be considered an actual meeting of the Board of Aldermen. Anyway, it would be a mess. So what I want to suggest is I had pulled the board at one point a week or so ago about who was interested in serving on this board. I heard from a couple different folks. I want to suggest that we appoint three aldermen, specifically myself and Dan and Randy, and then that we also appoint one citizen I think it would make sense for that person to be James Carnahan as the chair of our planning board and as the person who helped come up with one alternative and put on the table one alternative vision for Carolina North already. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, I'm flexible. So that's my suggestion.
Well, I'd like to move what Mark said.
Second that.
Let me just offer something, which might be Alan Spalt, who is also. I think you're absolutely correct that James is the ideal is an ideal person. I'm wondering if maybe we should do a two and two board members, two citizen reps. And I was going to suggest Alan because he had been involved in from the inception in the original negotiations through the Horace Williams Committee. He brings a lot of institutional memory to it, and he's also expressed an interest in participating in this next phase. It's not an objection, but it's just something I just throw out.
Well, I think he can participate without being an appointee because it's open and there are people there. I think we need, as just a matter of heft, We need three board members at that table with that committee, and then I think Carnahan brings his years of experience as our planning person, along with his experience with the Village Project, and Alan is certainly welcome to come along because there are other people who are contributing members, aren't there, Mark? Or
it'll certainly be an open meeting, and I would welcome.
Why don't we make Alan the citizen alternate?
My understanding is that James has indicated, I think you told me this, Mark, that he's going to go to every meeting anyway.
He did tell me that he was going to be there regardless.
If he's planning on being there, if maybe we can get more bang for our buck by appointing someone who might not otherwise be there. It limits James' voice then.
Except to the extent, I would agree that it's critically important that James be a voting member of that committee.
Well, I'd like the suggestion somebody just threw out somewhere that we appoint Alan as an alternate.
as a way of dealing with that. I have a feeling that there will it will inevitably be the case that we won't have all five of these people present at every last meeting.
Right.
So to me, that sounds like a pretty good mix. And
can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Not that I'm too opposed to the mix. It's just that I want to be sure, because this is about the last thing I'm going to say about it, given the fact that my father-in-law is a facilitator.
Sure.
I hope, and my expectation, that we would continue to employ the strategy that we have previously employed in our participation on this, and that is to look what is best for Carver. And that's the best way I can put it, and that's the most diplomatic way I'm going to put it right now.
And
I'm just going to have to say it right now. Should I feel that it's not, that I'm going to bring it up at the appropriate time?
I think you should certainly feel free to do that. And I want to say that I think on the about this whole situation with this committee, that this represents a really important opportunity for us to engage constructively with the university in trying to come up with a set of principles and potentially at some point a plan for the development of that property that that meets the environmental concerns and other issues and needs of our community, but that also, and I'm committed to this, that also affords UNC the opportunity to make good use of the property and to carry out at a basic level the type of project or plan that they envision. Maybe not necessarily, I have a difference of opinion, in other words, with some folks I know at UNC about how it physically should be laid out, about how people will get there, about the sort of taxation equity issues for our school system that may be implied in it all. But bottom line, I think I'm going there with the intention of supporting UNC in building some version of Carolina North that meets their needs.
I think it is
really healthy and good to see that Chapel Hill has chosen to appoint some folks to this committee who have been at times strong critics of the university's plan. That will not necessarily make it the easiest committee to serve on or to be on, but I think that if the point of this exercise having this committee, if the point of having this committee is to seriously come up with a plan that we can all live with, then it's got to be at least in part about sitting down at the table with the people who have been critical of the plan.
And I don't have a problem with that. My comments were to say that we have always had a strategy separate and apart from Chapel Hill, and I would hope that we would continue to have that strategy. More importantly, when the university decides to invite people who can make a decision from the state level, both from the Board of Governors and from the governor's office, that we should take that seriously and not stick our foots in our mouths.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And my expectation is that our representatives would not do that. And I'm saying it so people will know exactly when I come back and say that I've been exceedingly disappointed, I'm certainly going to mention it. And if anybody needs to revisit how we've been doing things, I would ask the staff to provide, especially the new individuals, the information about it. But my expectation is that Carver will be represented and represented well. And if we are not, this will have to be brought back before the board. I'm done.
Okay. Thanks. So is that motion, has somebody made that motion
I
as far as
that.
With Spalt as an alternate?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and move it. Well, if he's already seconded it. I would only add to Joel's comments, which are very pointed, but there is a historical context over a very long period of time in which our Scarborough engaged the community or the university very constructively, and the results in the last round, even though there's obviously going to be a new iteration here, the results were that our interests were achieved in that last round.
Right.
And so I think to some degree what Joel's saying, and I would add emphasis to that, that we should continue that role of positive engagement, while some of the other relationships have been contentious. And we don't, homie don't need to play that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to.
I'm just curious, what interests are you referring to?
Carver's interests.
When you say the last round, I guess.
In the last round of in discussions with the Horace Williams Committee involved, where the stream crossings would go, what tracks.
You mean on Carolina North specifically?
Yes.
Open space.
Would be held in preservation. Mm-hmm. And there are still some items where there isn't full agreement, but there is agreement in principle.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, again, this is taking on a new iteration and things may change substantially. But I think that if we keep that tone of positive engagement, we're going to yield better results.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking for any changes on any backward changes on any of that. Absolutely.
I don't know when I get a chance to say this, but my real concerns are that we make sure, we as a community, make sure that the university is intending to pay the impact fee on housing unless it meets the affordable standard and gets the nonprofit thing. And that they intend to pay the impact fee for schools and that they intend to pay all of the OWASA fees, because otherwise the community is going to end up subsidizing that. So, I mean, I know we each have our laundry list, but
Why don't we have a separate discussion where we give our delegation marching orders?
I think that's a great suggestion. I think that Ken Brown indicated that he wanted to begin to get this group actually together toward the end of this month or sometime early in March. So my feeling would be that just as soon as that's happened, that it would be good for us to go back and review where we are on Carolina North, look at the past planning documents that we've come up with about that, and try to make sure that we have a unified vision as a town about what our interests are in Carolina North.
Mark, I just want to say, having been on the Horace Williams committee, that I thought a lot was achieved for Carborough, and I too feel that we are in a very good position to have a great conversation with UNC, and I want to see us continue with that. And of course, with this new iteration, it will take reestablishing some of that conversation, but I think we were on the right road. So.
Okay. This has been properly moved and seconded. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. Madam Clerk, Mr. Manager.
Didn't even think of it.
Mr. Attorney.
I had one more matter.
Yeah, we're coming to you in just a minute, Mr. Attorney.
No.
Okay. Matters briefly by the board.
This is quick. Okay, so one of the things is a short proposal that to come behind some of the things that we talked about in the retreat to create a task force for the newly incorporated areas in Carborough and make it an official town task force, New Horizons Transitional Task Force, creating a natural conduit for the communication that we've been talking about having. And how do we go about getting that officially established?
Well, we'll probably make it an agenda item and discuss it and discuss the details of it.
All right.
So we can schedule it as an agenda item.
All right.
Okay.
To go on the agenda.
So it's been moved and...
Oh, wait a second. Can we add to that the revival? Didn't you request the revival of that community building committee?
Yeah, I'd like to see the community.
Right.
I'd like to... Yeah, we can put that on the agenda item. I'd like to see it be a separate a separate committee, but we can put the revival of the thanks, John, revival of the community building committee.
Okay.
On the agenda. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. So it was moved.
So we scheduled
and seconded that that we schedule some time on an upcoming agenda to discuss both of those matters. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Any other items?
What I hope is just a yes or no question. Last month there was an issue raised that people who were not yet annexed were not getting our cable signal properly for our meetings. And do we know if that has been resolved?
Mr. Manager, can you look into the question of whether people are getting proper cable service in the northeast part of Carrboro, folks who are new residents up there, and report to us about that situation?
Could I get a, what do you mean by proper cable service?
Well, there was some suggestion that maybe they weren't, folks in that area weren't able to see, for example, our glorious meetings.
Well, right, like there. In Chapel Hill, they don't get our meeting unless there's a Chapel Hill meeting, in which case we get preempted. And they were getting the Chapel Hill service.
I'll ask that question again, government. But I think there's not much of anything we can do about that.
Until we get those accounts changed.
Yeah, maybe there's not something we can do formally about that. But I tell you what, maybe if you'll give me a little further background than that, then maybe we can work on a letter from the mayor to our candidate about that topic.
Right. Really quick, was it like 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, we lost a valuable member of our community and somebody from the civil rights movement, Bob Neruda, as he changed his name, Brown, and I would like the board to, you know, just make emphasis that we lost somebody who also is married to a former public servant of the county, Margaret Brown, and that we really thank him for the great ideas and a lot of issues that he moved forward that makes our communities what they are today. And also we send our condolences to Margaret Brown for her loss.
Thanks for bringing that up, John.
Mm-hmm.
All right. With that, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor signify by
aye.